new version. Good evening, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN. It's time for True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust Home of Cubs Checking. It's the pregame for Game 4 of the NLDS, the Chicago Cubs out in San Francisco to take on the Giants tonight. Last night, everyone's still recovering from a long night, 13-inning game where the Cubs came up just short to be able to close out the series in San Francisco. Mark Carmen in studio with me, WGN Radio Sports. Kevin Powell out at AT&T Park tonight. We'll get with him in just a moment. Mark, last night, long night. You guys were on the air. You sounded great. But, I mean, that was a game that you feel as a Cubs fan and as a journalist that we should have had.
I love you giving me the journalist vibe there, Justin. I would never claim that. But, yeah, you were speaking on it in the pregame yesterday that Madison Bumgarner is not all that and a bag of chips. I think I sort of like fought back at you. But listen, they got to him last night. And great at-bat by Addison Russell. And then a phenomenal bat fouled by Javi Baez, wearing him down. And then Arrieta hits the three-run bomb. Anthony Rizzo goes crazy.
They chased him. He was out by the fifth inning?
Fifth inning, he's gone. Wow. And you have a 3-0 lead. You got Arrieta out of the mound. You got to win that game. You really just do. And, yeah, there's that whole thing, well, you still the Giants were going to win a game, and you got game four, and you've got Lackey going tonight against their fourth starter, Matt Moore, who's pitched very well, by the way. I just don't think you want to get to a game five against this team, man. And so you had a chance last night, and I think they'll bounce back and they'll play well, but you had a shot to end it last night. Yeah. That hurts.
This is a talented team, but one of the things you brought up in both pregames we've done together has been the what do the Cubs do in the eighth inning. We saw last night some kind of a head-scratcher. Hector Rondon quickly pulled after one walk, and he went to Aroldis Chapman. Manager Joe Maddon goes to Aroldis Chapman for a six-out save.
Yep. And so when he got to the Cubs, right, they started using Chapman with two outs in the eighth. And then he had a blown save doing that, and it was after that it just stopped. Which, you know, I felt like Chapman. If you listen to Alex Rodriguez on the post game last night, he was saying that Chapman is a creature of habit. I've played with him. He likes the ninth inning. He wants it clean. He wants to start the inning. That's what he does. So if you're Joe Maddon and you've gotten to know this guy for a couple months now, to rush him out there in the eighth for one batter. Stud lefty, I would get it, but the whole inning, and then you're going to have him come out and throw the ninth, and then if it doesn't go your way, like it didn't, you're asking him to pitch tonight, fourth game in 5 days. It reeked of desperation, and to me, that's not what Joe Maddon is about.
And it's interesting too, because he's been heralded as a coach who's played in these games. He understands the late innings. He knows how to finesse, and it did feel like, In a strange way, that it was almost like a tense, tight moment for Coach Maddon.
Well, and your upper run, right, and they've got first and second, nobody out. The Giants are in a great position to bunt. Chapman is going to be hard to bunt against, throwing 99 up in the zone. So that was part of his thinking. And he struck out Hunter Pence, and it looked good for a second. And then I just knew that Connor Gillespie, and I've got a lot of fears that don't happen, that I didn't know, but when Connor Gillespie had the three-run bomb to beat the New York Mets, I'm like, that dude is going to do something at some point in the series.
As a White Sox fan, I'm like, no, he's not. That's what right. I would counter with, no, he's not, because he did nothing while he was in here in Chicago.
Well, you could feel as the game went along that, okay, you had an opportunity to score here. It didn't happen. Now it's 3-1. It's 3-2. And the Giants had a lot of momentum out of their pen. Their bullpen guys were showing a lot of emotion. You could just feel the swell going the way of San Francisco, and they ended up pulling it out.
Okay, so let's talk about the Cubs' offense. For whatever reason, the Cubs, who've been really, really strong late game, they had opportunities to win this playoff game, and that's going to haunt them. Put the sort of voodoo and the Cubs curse to the side. The idea that these offensive stars for the Cubs, sans Chris Bryant, really didn't do much when they had runners in position and they didn't take advantage of some opportunities that could have sealed this game early.
Right, and listen, you got big guys struggling. End of story, right? When you're sitting there with a guy who's an MVP candidate and Anthony Rizzo doesn't have a hit in the series, I mean, you're climbing uphill. This guy's in the middle of your order. He's hitting third, and he hasn't had a hit all series, and he wasn't great in the playoffs last year either. So still a small body of work, but I mean, that's a lot to overcome. And even at the top of the lineup, I mean, Dexter Fowler right now is hitting 167. Jason Hayward's at 25. Addison Russell's at 83. And you've got Rizzo, zero. Montero, only played one game, but zero. Ross hasn't had a hit. Soler didn't have a hit. You know, so you're looking at three guys hitting, and he didn't put Wilson Contreras in the lineup tonight. I mean, Wilson Contreras is 3-for-5. I was surprised that he went with David Ross.
It must be for the fact that John Lackey's comfortable. Let's make a before we transition to tonight's game, you know, last night's game, the positives we saw, I mean, you can go one way or another with Albert Almora out in right field. I don't think anyone catches that ball that's over his head. He's got the best shots at it. But later in the game, that diving catch to double up was amazing. And also, Chris Bryant, I mean, if you were going to, I know the playoffs don't count when it comes to MVP, but I think we may have seen one candidate rise above and one fall behind when it comes to Bryant and Rizzo.
You know, and Bryant last year wasn't great. He swung at a lot of balls out of the zone. It's happened a couple times so far, but he came into this series, I just feel way more comfortable than I did last year. I mean, that's what he was saying, and he's 5-for-12. He's got a couple of doubles. He hits the home run last night.
Unbelievable.
How can you not just appreciate this guy, right? For a clutch, third base, left field, right field, center field, first base. And he's just like all-American kid.
And you really do. I mean, last year the knock on Chris Bryant was, he was swinging outside the zone in the playoffs. You saw him strike out a lot against some of those big power pitchers on the Mets. You're like, well, we really need to see it. And I think he solidified himself as if not the best player on the field, one of the best in this series.
Yeah, and I'm looking back at it. I mean, last year in the postseason, Chris Bryant, I'm going to pull up his numbers real quick here. But he hit 176. Okay, so he's hitting 417 right now. He's 5-for-12. Now hopefully he'll have a lot more at-bats, and that can just regress to the mean, and he can hit a nice, calm 320. That's cool. But, you know, last year he hit in 34 at-bats, he had 6 hits. He was 6-for-34. So in 12 at-bats, he's got 5. It's a different guy.
And the other guy on the field who is just becoming a star is Javi Baez. I mean, you are seeing their flash. He's coming up next. I mean, even the network the Fox Network is throwing Javi Baez as the Cubs guy. They can't say enough about him. He's had every time you turn around, this guy's on base or making a tremendous play in the on defense.
Yeah, and having deep at bats, which was something that he was not at all predicted to be able to do, which was one of the reasons why people thought that they would trade him, because he wasn't quote unquote a Theo guy who could extend at bats, get pitchers into a fatigue zone, so you have to go to the bullpen, or even make a pitch to Jake Arrieta, which is not Madison Bumgarner at his best. And you know, Javi's been, I mean, at the plate, in the field, and whenever he comes across as a super cocky guy too, but when you talk to him, he's a pretty humble dude. Javi Baez.
Mark Carmen, WGN Radio Sports. It is True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust Home of Cubs Checking. We're doing pre-game before the first pitch, I think, is after 7:30 tonight at AT&T Park. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll go to Kevin Powell, who's standing by in San Francisco, to give us an update on tonight's lineup and what we can expect from John Lackey in Game 4. It's 7:20 WGN. Stay with us.
Because time is short for this old fan. And I said, listen, they'll beat every team in this here land. They win everywhere, man. They beat everyone, son. Both the desert's bare, man, and the mountain air, man. Better best beware, man. The Cubs win everywhere.
It's True Blue Playoff Plus from Wintrust Home and Coach Checking. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Mark Harmon. Of course, WGN Radio Sports out at AT&T Park, getting ready for Game 4 of the San Francisco Giants-Chicago Cubs is Kevin Powell. He joins us now on the line. Kevin, what do we expect tonight? I mean, obviously last night was a long night. Is everybody in the press box pretty much hungover?
A little hungover, but we're battling through. For me, this is the exact type of game the Cubs signed John Lackey for, with huge moments. He's been here before. This is his 21st career postseason start. He's been in World Series twice. He pitched against the Giants in the 2002 World Series. So for me, it's what's John Lackey going to do? Is he going to come up big and do exactly what Theo and Jed hoped he could do in these situations and come up big for them? So that's who I'm sort of watching here. The only guy, for as crazy of a night that was, Joe Maddon pointed out, almost the entire bullpen worked, but other than Montgomery, No one really went a long stretch. Montgomery went, was it four innings? Travis Wood faced one batter. Rondon faced one batter. Chapman faced two batters, three batters. He had about 22 pitches. So even though it was a long game, I guess the bright side of things, and Joe Maddon talked about it in the post game, was everyone got to play. You know, right. So that's, I don't know if that's a way for them to brush off some nerves or anything like that, but everyone got some reps in there and everyone contributed. I mean, Mike Montgomery, sure, he gave up the winning runs, but God, what a performance from him coming into that tough spot.
There was we were just talking about the Cubs and the clutch. You know, obviously Chris Bryant had a huge home run, but other than that, we haven't seen the Cubs, you know, be able to get that run across that's out at second base or third base. Is there any talk about whether or not, you know, who needs to step up and if they can sort of handle that part of it here in game four against the Giants?
No one really pointed any fingers to anybody or said this guy that or this guy that, but obviously, as I'm sure you guys maybe mentioned, Anthony Rizzo obviously has to produce tonight. He hasn't been on base in three games in this series. He's been pretty bad at the plate. He actually hits left-handers fairly well, and Matt Moore is a lefty, of course, so I think if Rizzo starts hitting, I think Chris Bryant's going to continue to do Chris Bryant things. That's why he's the MVP. But Anthony Rizzo, for the leader he is, for what he means to this team, the heart of the lineup, he's got to produce tonight. So Joe Maddon was asked if he thinks Rizzo's pressing. He didn't say no. He didn't say yeah. But he didn't really completely shy away from that question. So maybe Rizzo is feeling like he does need to, you know, throw things on his shoulders a little bit or whatever it is, but he's got to find a way to get on base, draw a walk, or do what he's supposed to do and hit for power.
I mean, he's got to be pressing. It's just human nature, and it would be so beautiful for Anthony Rizzo and for the Cubs if he could launch one into the night tonight. John Lester, I guess, spoke before the game, Kevin. He said nobody cares about a curse or a goat. If we make a mistake, we're not blaming it on a curse. We're going to be accountable. Is that, I guess that's the attitude of this team right now, right? I mean, I heard Chris Bryant after the game last night, and he was saying it was just a great baseball game. Maddon said the same thing, so they're not feeling that the weight of the Cub, perhaps?
No, not at all. I mean, they said it all season, though. They've been asked about it a million times. And Lester says it's not like they don't talk about the so-called curse or jinxes, whatever. It's not like they don't talk about it, but when they do, they're just almost sort of making fun of it. You know what I mean? It's not like they're like, oh, it's a curse again. It's something that they say they talk about in the clubhouse. They didn't really get into detail. It's just something they've recognized. I don't think any of them actually believe there's a curse. They recognize that there's a perceived curse from the fan base and from Cubs Nation. But no, this team has too many veterans on it. Plus, there's just too much talent for them to even worry about that at all. So, no, of course, these guys were saying all the right things, and they didn't allude to any so-called curse. So I don't think you have to worry about any of that with this squad.
I'm not saying it's a curse. I think I'm a slightly intelligent person, at least at times, and I understand it's not about a goat. But I do think that inherently, when you don't want to come home and play a game five. You just don't. And when you lose a game that you were supposed to win or could have won at the bare minimum, it does get a little tighter. So I almost feel like I almost want to hear from them like, hey, there's pressure on us. There's pressure on them.
Right. Instead of saying it the other way, right.
You know, let's be honest about what's going on here.
Yeah, and that's why these five-game series are crazy. That's what Joe Maddon said in his presser for two in classic Joe Maddon fashion. He said, anything can happen in a five-game series, man. That's what Joe Maddon said, and he's right. I mean, you go up 2-0, the Giants win last night, and now it feels like all the pressure's on the Cubs. Because if they don't win, they go back to Wrigley 2-2, and then you face a pitcher you don't want to face. The Giants face a pitcher they don't want to face. But look at game one. That could have gone either way, too. Those are two phenomenal pitching matchups. You're going to have the same thing in game five Thursday, where instead of Javi Baez hitting the solo shot to give the Cubs the one-run win, maybe it's Connor Gillespie hitting a one-run shot off John Lester in the shot. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's crazy how these short series work. But I feel like all the pressure's on the Cubs tonight. I feel like the Giants have the momentum just like that. I guess that's why postseason baseball is so damn awesome.
Kevin, let me ask you about the starting pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, Matt Moore. He came over from Tampa Bay in the midseason. Obviously, at one point in his career, he was lights out. He had Tommy John. He really hasn't come back. But he's been pitching well as of late. A left-hander coming out. Are the Cubs familiar with Matt Moore, and do you feel like they have a good good opportunity to get at him?
No, they're not familiar at all. I think Dexter Fowler is like the only one who's faced him, maybe one other guy on the team. The Cubs, though, if you look at numbers against lefty, they're actually pretty good. So I don't think that should concern you enough. It's just Matt Moore has been up and down. He almost threw a no-hitter, what was that, late August, August 25th. I think he was one hit away from it. He gave that up late. So he doesn't scare you, certainly, like Madison Bumgarner or Johnny Cueto. But as the Cubs have shown, this lineup is so stacked, even when they're not hitting that well. Jake Arrieta may come off the bench and hit a three-run homer. It's like who's up next with this team? It's insane. So I don't think Matt Moore is going to scare them when they just faced Madison Bumgarner and Johnny Cueto. So
right.
Is Matt Moore good? Yeah, he's good. He's up and down, though, in the second half of the season. He hasn't been dominant or anything. So, you know, maybe it is the fact that they haven't seen – a lot of the guys haven't seen a bunch of them. Maybe plays towards Moore's favor, or maybe after two at-bats, watch out. Let's see if Moore's still in the game. Third bat around, the averages always seem to kick up on all offenses. So I don't think Matt Moore's scaring this team, or he shouldn't be scared of him, but he's a quality pitcher, though, for sure.
Yeah. Kevin Powell out at AT&T Park tonight. Big game four, Cubs-Giants coming up right here.
Hey, do you
want to
know what
minutes.
I just ate at AT&T Park?
What did you eat?
I went with a triple threat of protein. It was three sliders, turkey, corned beef, and beef brisket, and a side of potato salad. I'd share that with you guys.
There you go. Thank you for sharing. That's a strong meal. That's a strong dinner, yeah. Kev. All right. Kevin Powell.
A lot of protein.
Thanks, covering the game. We'll catch him up at post-game, which Adam Hoge and Mark Carmen will be hosting 11-2 True Blue here after the game tonight. Obviously, not knowing the pitcher can go one way or the other for the Cubs, but the Cubs ultimately are resting their hopes in Game 4 on John Lackey. I mean, he came – I mean, Kev said it, you said it. I mean, the idea that they brought him in, I mean, it couldn't be more pitcher perfect. Signed him to come in and pitch this game.
He won Game 1 for the Cardinals over the Cubs last year, the one game that the Cardinals won. He also lost Game 4, but he got on the bus today. He had his cowboy hat on. He had it tipped down so he could barely see his eyes. That dude is all business. And one of my favorite moments this year, I asked him, hey, because in April and May, he was downplaying how they started, you know, 25-6, and he was like, it's early. So in August, I asked him, hey, what's the fair expectations for this team? He's like, fair expectations. And then he's, I didn't come up for a haircut, man. World Series. And I'm like, okay. Thank you for saying that. Like, because you were downplaying it earlier. And he put it out there. And, hey, man, this is why he's here. Let's go, John Lackey.
I have memories of Angels, Yankees, Angels, all Angels, and John Lackey pitching big games and playoffs and World Series in the past. Mark Carman's going to be hosting postgame with Adam Hoge coming up at 11 o'clock here on WGN Radio. We're looking forward to it.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Well, as the first pitch is coming up here in the next 5 minutes, the FS1 broadcast has the Dodgers and the Nationals in the eighth inning tied up. As we saw in Game 1, we missed the first pitch. They went over to MLB Network and kind of caught up on FS1. So right now, I guess you have to it's an MLB Network broadcast in 5 minutes. So just for everyone who's listening out there, if you're looking for the Cubs game, it's going to start in MLB and probably move back to FS1. What do you think?
Pete and I were just talking off the air, lamenting this MLB television schedule for the first round.
Yeah, right.
And I really hope that Major League Baseball gets ripped over this, because this is ridiculous.
It is.
Bouncing around like this, trying to find the games, especially, again, Cubs Nation, coast to coast, people want to watch the Cubs. All due respect to the Dodgers and Nats, the Cubs have a much bigger following, and this is ridiculous.
And you would think that they would just be able to cut away at least a market, right?
I'm upset.
Oh, no. No, not this so early in the show for you to be upset. No.
Don't get the news All guy right. ticked off.
We'll make it.
Tonight on The Download, The Daily Line's Mike Fouché, Chicago filmmaker David Singer, and musician Dweezil Zappa. And now here's your host, a man who is thinking about rocking the flat brim, Justin Kaufman.
It's watching all these players, like watching the playoffs. I'm like, oh, Javi Baez, nice flat brim. Like, everybody, whatever happened to the bended cap? You know, like the old Dave Kingman look. Carney Lansford, no? Get myself a strobe side. Just get my hat a little bit cocked to the side, right? Good evening, everybody. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight, post-game after that, the Cubs game. Adam Hogue, of course, Mark Carmen. Both will start at 11 o'clock, even if the game hasn't ended. Like last night, I felt bad for those guys. We left them at 11 o'clock, and they're like getting ready for the, here we go. Here, this is going to be it within the hour, and it didn't end up till 1:45. They did the whole show essentially talking about the outcome that had not happened yet. But they did great. It sounded great. They'll be back on tonight, 11 o'clock. Tonight on the show, Mike Fouché is going to join us, do some politics. Obviously, the mayor today, a big budget proposal, talking about what to do with all that tax money. We'll talk to him about the new taxes for disposable plastic and paper bags and surge parking. Ooh. And how are we going to pay for this teacher's contract? We'll talk about that as well. Also tonight, as you heard in the intro, which is so exciting, Dweezil Zappa is with me tonight. Dweezil, the son of Frank Zappa, is playing his dad's music all over a 50-year anniversary of the of a seminal album. Frank Zappa, it's tremendous because I went down the rabbit hole on this story. The Zappa family's got some issues. The siblings are fighting over the name. There's a lot of trademark issues, whether or not Dweezil can play Frank Zappa's music, if he can use the name Frank Zappa. There's so much going on there. But lost in the shuffle is the fact that his son is on tour right now celebrating the music of his dad, which is truly groundbreaking. I've been listening to Frank Zappa for the last day and a half. I'm like, wow, this was out in 1966? All right, there you go. Also tonight, David Singer's going to be with us. His movie Imperfection is at the Chicago International Film Festival this weekend. We've been talking to Dave throughout. I mean, for the last year, we've been talking to him about the process of making this film, and it has been finished. So we'll talk with David Singer coming up as well tonight. And we'll play the worst. TJ Jagodowski and Abby McEnany are back together tonight. They'll be in studio to help us play. 312-981-7200. This is where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. All right, let's get going with the show. Let's do the carryout. Why don't we do the carryout now? This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news to you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Board of Education came to an agreement at last minute last night to avert a strike. You know what? You couldn't make the deadline like 7 o'clock, so we didn't have to wake up this morning and go, oh, I guess there is school. The city hasn't really told us what's in the deal, but it will include both TIF money and the Obama Prep High School is now on hold. Aw, bummer. I was looking forward to the bronze Barry Obama statue somewhere on the north side. Aw, bummer. The mayor wrapped up that business and then gave us the budget address. He gave it to city council today. He outlined the new taxes from water to bags to parking surges. Circle of life, I guess. In the 2016 election news, more from WikiLeaks as they dumped thousands of emails from the Democratic National Committee hack. Most of it, well, to be honest, all of it, super benign. Sorry, I know that's going to irk some, but her people sending emails to each other saying that Hillary better hope for Trump, that's really not that far-fetched. And let's be honest, you sent the same emails. We all sent the same emails. Come on, this is just gossip fodder stuff. Trump, on the other hand, busy yelling at the Republican Party, namely Paul Ryan, for jumping ship. He also put out an ad that shows a stumbling Hillary Clinton saying she's not physically fit for president. Hey, what can you say? It takes 2 or 3 weeks to get a commercial ready these days. I mean, just think, when it comes late October, early November, we're going to get a ton of Billy Bush commercials. He wants to grab them in the Billy Bush? I don't know how that's not a t-shirt yet, right? So much about the election. I can't wrap my head around it. And that's why I have a new segment called the Kaufman Fact Check. No sting? No sound effect? Nothing? No big horns? Nothing? Okay, fine. Keep it that booming voice for nothing. All right, let me be the voice of reason. Hillary Clinton did not laugh at a 12-year-old rape victim. Use common sense here, people. She represented the rapist because she was a public defender. She asked to get off the case, but she couldn't, and she ended up springing the dude. That was her job. She even wrote about it in her book. That's the source. Stop. She's not that evil, all right? but I'm an equal opportunity fact checker. The latest news that Donald Trump is working with Russia? Total bogus. Yeah, he presented a memo to a rally in Pennsylvania that was inaccurate, but he didn't get said memo from the KGB on a Moscow street corner. Here are the documents you want, Mr. Trump. Come on. It makes me wonder if any of the Democrats actually use the internet. It's called the dark web. You want a memo? I can get you a memo. Knock it off. And locally, don't get me started, the ad that Democrats put together against Rauner attaching him to Trump? Asinine. Everyone knows that Rauner has distanced himself since even before the primary. He's a Republican, so guess what? He's probably going to vote for a Republican. But he doesn't endorse Trump. He doesn't even like Trump. So the ad saying that he stands with Trump is sloppy, and it just plays to the uneducated. And you know what? We're not. So that's a bad move, all right? And finally, about the Kardashian jewel heist in Paris? Yeah. That was an inside job. She did it herself for publicity. And that's the Kaufman Fact Check! In weather, it's nice today. Cooler by the lake, though. I personally like it a little hotter, so that's why I take my Galaxy 7 phone with me wherever I go. You never know when I'll need my pocket to start on fire. Galaxy 7. It starts fires. In sports, the city of Chicago is tired today after the Cubs lost Game 3 in 13 innings last night. Why have that game be so late? The only consolation is that maybe, just maybe, a bunch of Giants fans missed their ferry home and had to sleep on that hill where the Full House family has that picnic. The Cubs send Lackey tonight to the mound, and frankly, this is exactly why we got him. So no pressure, big country. No pressure. Same lineup from Game 1 for the Cubs for the Giants? I don't know. Who knows? I can't keep track of all the waiver wire trash they put on the field. Rizzo needs a big game. Hasn't been on base yet in the first three games. Yikes! That's like Aramis Ramirez, Derek Lee numbers there. In other sports news, the Chicago Blackhawks are back in business tomorrow night at the UC hosting the Blues, the same team that beat them in the playoffs last year, so that's a good opener. The news from Hawks camp is that the preseason experiment of splitting up Kane and Panarin didn't stick, and they'll be back together on the second line. The first line looks to be Taves, Hossa, and Panik, so let's drop the puck now. Just let it marinate. Hang out. 24 hours. Just chilling. Seems like once things calm down at Halas Hall and we accept our fate as lovable losers, along comes former players to rile us up. Again, it's Martellus Bennett telling ESPN that the Bears didn't win because Cutler isn't a leader and the roster was, quote, full of bitches and that the coaches loved the bitches. Great. Am I the only one who never liked Martellus Bennett, king of the 3-yard gain and the 30-second saunter back to the huddle? Stop talking. Belichick, please make him stop. He's ripping on the Bears for what reason? Because we let you go play for the Patriots? Come on, dude, man up. Stop complaining. You were bad here. Just deal with it. We're never going to like you. Get over it. Talk to a therapist. Not ESPN. Jeez. Rant over. And finally tonight, President Obama outlined his intent to see this country send people to Mars. The only problem? He didn't specify who. That's the carryout for October 11, 2016. Hey, in the mood for straws? Because I got a ton of straws. Take more than one if you want. Hey, I got more in the back. All right, more to come here on the download. Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio. We'll talk about the deal with the teachers and also the Chicago budget. The budget proposal today, Mayor Emanuel introduced to City Council. We'll talk about that and much more on the download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Mike Fouché from the DailyLine.net.
So good to be here. So good to be here. And man, that music. Wow.
You like that?
It's
very spy-like.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you about some espionage.
All right. Let's talk about two big stories that are happening outside of baseball today. Obviously, last night at the final minute.
Yeah.
Karen Lewis and Chicago Teachers Union hold an impromptu press conference to say that they have accepted an agreement or for a new contract with the Chicago Board of Education.
Wasn't that amazing? And then I get my auto call phone call at 6 this morning. CPS parents, your children will be going to school today. That was awesome.
Well, I will say this, Mike. One of my pet peeves is why not set the deadline for 7 o'clock so we all are over, so we all can get our kids prepared. That when my son woke up and I'm like, there's
sorry,
school today.
Yeah.
You know, there's
sad trombone for kids.
they really didn't factor into
happy
this at
days
all.
For happy parents. Days. Yeah. La, la, la.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So what? Tell me about this deal. I mean, it was kind of short on details, but talk about what made it possible for this deal to get done.
You know, so really, what it's all about. But what one thing that the Chicago Teachers Union has really done very well is that they've been hammering away at the idea that there's this big giant pot of gold called TIFs that the mayor has, and that he should be devoting some amount of the pot of gold to teachers.
Broke on purpose.
On purpose. And then they started, you know, getting all kinds of things like, hey, you know, there's this big arena for DePaul University the mayor's paying for with TIFs, all this other great stuff, all these corporate bennies for TIFs, but nothing for kids. No TIFs aren't for kids. You know, it was kind of rough, and they did a great job of making that case. And I think that Mayor Emanuel kind of looking down the road and seeing what that was going to be wasn't so good for him, because the truth is the TIFs, whether or not you like them, are an excellent tool for the mayor to use in order to encourage development in various parts of the city. It's his last really good, I can do anything I want with it. Yeah, you know, some people call it a slush fund. There's a little bit of truth to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the teachers, I think, were going to hammer away at that for him for, you know, weeks. And that would have been very bad for his purposes. And what they were looking for was some amount of money to cover their pension costs. And so the mayor agreed to dip into TIFs and create a surplus of, you know, an extra. It's hard to say how much extra it was, because this morning the budget was rolled out and they said it was $175 million. There was going to be some surplus that was going to be devoted. Last year they did $116 million. So, you know, probably $60 million or so extra than they would have done otherwise.
Let me ask you just a...
And so a whole bunch of money goes to CPS from the TIFs in order to be able to pay for teachers.
I mean, I'll
pensions.
Ask sort of a sports-like question, but who's the winners? I mean, does CTU claim victory in this negotiation? Does the mayor walk away with the upper hand? Who's the winner? I mean,
All winners, Justin Coffin. We're all winners. And that, I mean, as sarcastic and as funny as it is, I mean, the way that it's coming across is that everyone's declaring victory. There is no victory dance on one side saying, ha-ha, beat you, like there was the last strike. Mm-hmm. I mean, the teachers clearly beat Rahm Emanuel in the last strike. And so, you know, I guess that's good for everyone. But the truth is, there wasn't a lot of wiggle room for the teachers. And what the teachers did give up is that all new hires no longer get the pension pickup. So their 7% of their pension payments are picked up by CPS for teachers. Mm-hmm. All new teachers that are hired will no longer get that pension
pickup. So do they have to pay in for their own pension?
Yes, for all of their pension. You know, the pension pickup, that's unusual. Not every place has a pension pickup.
Well, I did enough reading on it because it was just kind of shoved in our face in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And I came away with the idea that this was essentially the pension pickup was a negotiation years ago.
That's right.
To avoid giving teachers a raise. Instead, they said, we'll pick up your pension.
Right.
They've done with many sorts of places, they've misused that money. Now they've gone back saying, we're taking that away, but we're not necessarily giving you the raise. So you can see why the teachers were angry about that.
And the other is the other big item economically is that the schools agreed to have a COLA increase of 2% and 2.5% in years 3 and year 4 of the 4-year contract. There's no COLA increase for the next...
What is COLA?
Cost of living allowance.
Okay, got it.
So you get an automatic increase. Everybody gets an automatic increase in their pay. So for the next 2 years, there's no COLA increase. In years 3 and 4, there are. And then they're also going to... put back in what are called step raises, which are things that you get as you go up
the obvious question in the room is, we've been talking about this for a year, Mike. I mean, is the budget woes of the Chicago Public Schools over? I mean,
no, not at all. Because I mean, there's a couple things, which is that this TIF transfer this year paid for this year. And there's no plan for what are you going to do next year. And also, CPS still has a fairly large deficit that it hasn't really solved for. And then there is about $200 million that they're counting on that'll come from the state legislature that depends on some undefined pension reform.
Mike Fouché from the DailyLine.net joins me. We'll take a quick break, get an update on tonight's news. Come back. We got to talk about today's city budget proposal from Mayor Emanuel.
That's the best news. Game in town today.
That is the best.
The budget, that's the best game in town, everybody.
Game, right?
The only game in town. There are no other games.
It's a download here on 720 WGN.
I'm just going to put on my peasant blouse and weave flowers in my hair.
That's your soundtrack,
so nice.
Man. Soundtrack of Mike Fouché, the DailyLine.net. We're talking all things Chicago, Illinois politics tonight. Obviously, today, the story is Mayor Emanuel's budget proposal to City Council. So let's talk about this. A big budget, but as the mayor said, sort of one first of its kind.
Did he hit a home run? I don't know. I mean, it was quite a catch. No, like here, you know, the thing is, it was probably, it's a huge budget. It's $9.3 billion, and there's just $1 billion that's being spent on pension payments alone. But in terms of new programs and exciting things, it's actually a pretty modest budget. There's no big, hot, flashy, cool, awesome.
Well isn't the flashy, hot thing is more police officers?
There's more police officers. There's a spending program that's being created, the Community Catalyst Fund, which is going to be about $33 million a year. That's going to be managed by a team led by the treasurer, Kurt Summers. And there's some other new programs for social services focusing on kids. But there's no giant program to build a new L line. Well, you know, they're working [S2] Right. [S1] On the red line. That's coming from other places. There's no new giant infrastructure programs, although, you know, there's a modest program where the city's going to try and replace all of its street lights to LED lights.
No DePaul Stadium.
Nothing like that.
Nothing like that.
There's nothing like that. And, you know, I think that one of the things that the mayor was trying to say is that this is a budget that is unlike any other, and that we no longer have this sort of Democles hanging over our heads, which is the budget, the cost of the pensions, the unresolved cost of the pensions, the unresolved debt issues that have been roiling around for a long time. And, you know, the fact that this teacher strike issue was resolved the day before he puts out the budget, that was kind of a big deal.
He looks good. It wouldn't have been great optics if the strike happened today and he had to give this budget, but he got it wrapped up. He got this speech without that sort of interfering. Let's talk about revenue, the taxes. We already know about the water tax that kind of went through.
Right.
The new one that kind of been floated up has been this disposable plastic and paper bag tax at 7 cents. You go into the Jewel or to
well,
the Target or the Walgreens.
As everybody knows, is that last year they had a paper bag ban. A plastic bag ban. And that a certain thickness are right. no longer allowed except in Ma and Pa stores. And so now all of our bags are a lot thicker with the idea that we could reuse them. Stores hate it. Consumers hate it. Everybody hates it. It's not effective. It's not really cutting back on the amount of plastic we consume. And so what the answer is, well, now we're going to have a tax. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a 7 cent per bag tax for every bag that you get in a store. It can be any kind of bag you want. But if it's plastic, you're paying paying 7 cents more. And so they've done that in a number of other cities in Washington and San Francisco and Houston, too, I think. And it seems to be effective in reducing the amount of bags that people use.
Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah.
But isn't the idea of having revenue that
right.
would, if you replace, if you, re, if so you that's reduce supposed to, it, you're not going to have the same money
right.
coming in.
They
right?
project that it's going to make between $13 and $18 million more a year, which, you know, isn't a lot, but it's something.
The other is a myriad of parking stuff. We saw loading zones.
Parking zones and new loading zones and some other things like that. But, you know, actually the city is claiming much bigger numbers with things like managing their finances better, clearing out. The treasurer said that there were dozens and dozens of these bank accounts that had just money that was sitting around, and they've been able to scrape up, you know, something like $40 million from stuff that was just not being used and not being invested well.
Couch, the city's couch,
right? And so, you know, hey, listen, you know, when you're going through, you know, billions of dollars a year, you know, when you find a million here and a million there, that's not so uncommon.
I will say this, Mike, and I'll get on my soapbox for just a second if I can grab it from the other
side
of the
studio.
Yeah,
don't get too high there. Wait.
The one area that I did not like, and I saw this, and just, you know, I don't expect you to have an opinion on this, but the parking meter surge pricing.
Essentially, in Wrigleyville,
around Wrigley Field, they're going to start it there as almost a pilot program where during day games and other events, they say events, and they're going to charge more at those meters. They're going to be able to program to say, you know, if there wasn't a game, it's $1 an hour. If there's a game, it's $8 an hour.
Right.
And then they say in the newspaper, out in the Tribune article, they actually say that this is a pilot program to roll out across the city.
Yeah.
I could have sworn that, and they do reference this, that we give all that money to the parking meter company that does the privatizing.
Yeah.
And the city said, yes, that is true, but it helps us on the back end with, you know, our annual blah, 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 blah. My point being that that's just, you know, you get to a certain point where you start doing surge pricing when it comes to parking. And I feel like that's just going to become something in 5 years where we're going, man, I can't believe.
I'm going to be devil's advocate here.
It's hot outside, so I guess we'll do $16 an hour by the lake.
I'm going to be devil's advocate. Because, I mean, once upon a time when I was a young man and, you know, I was cool, I lived in Lakeview. I didn't live in Wrigleyville, but I lived in Lakeview. And, you know, having a car was actually kind of dumb. I mean, if you live in that part of the city, you have a car, unless you are well off enough to have a garage, you know, I don't think you should be counting on a parking space.
That's not how people
you should be counting on a parking
space.
But
that's not how people park.
Get on the
bus. People park by stopping in front of the store or getting out in the lakefront or driving to a destination that might be a kind of a pain in the butt to do public transportation and using the meters there. The problem I have with a surge price is, like I just said, what happens when it's a nice day in June? Does someone at City Hall get to flip a switch and they get to surge price all the spots on the lake? So if you want to go run on the lakefront, it's going to be an extra $3 an hour. That's all I'm saying.
Where do you think they'd keep that switch? That would be really cool.
I have an idea, and I think it's on the fourth floor, but I'm not sure.
My brother is the guy that flips the switch.
Mayor Emanuel's mad at us, and he's like, well, I'll show you guys how to flip the switch. All right. The only other issue I want to talk about today as we'll wrap up here is, you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of uproar about the ad that the Democrats put out against Bruce Rauner, sort of tying him to Donald Trump.
Right.
When we hear constantly over and over and over.
Rauner
doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump. We all know that. He doesn't like him. He didn't go to the convention. Yeah. He's not endorsing him.
Yeah.
He every turn he gets on mic, at least in the last 2 weeks, where he says.
But he's never actually used his name. In fact, he was asked about him yesterday or a couple days ago.
He doesn't say.
And he said, terrible, awful, horrible.
He never said his name. Let me ask you about the state races, because, you know, there's still money at stake when it comes to the money that has to come to the city from Springfield and all the different places. And we're going to get back into that coming up after the election. You know, what are the races like right now when it comes to the House and Senate or the state of Illinois?
I mean, well, it's pretty clear that the Democrats are going to retain a significant majority in the Senate. The question is, will they be able to retain a almost veto-proof or an actual, they were one short of a veto, short of a veto-proof majority in the House. And they've been fighting and fighting in order to get that veto-proof majority. And there's about five or six Democrat seats that are really in danger and could lose. Now, everything that I've been hearing about is a couple weeks old, is before all the true demolition derby stuff happened with Donald Trump. And I think the danger for Republicans across Illinois is that Republican voters are just so frustrated and upset, they stay home, they don't vote.
Right.
And so, you know, nobody goes down the ticket in order to vote for these down ballot races for state legislature. And there's a lot of fired up Hillary Clinton supporters that go out and vote. That could carry the day. And, you know, that's the case across the nation. You know, I know of congressional seats in places that, you know, maybe are in play now that, that weren't in play a week ago. So I think there is a wholesale meltdown that's going down.
Well, we'll have to, you know, we'll talk next week, but we should pay attention as we hit October, because all eyes are on the presidential campaign and even the U.S. Senate here in the state of Illinois. But that state rep, state senate,
have
a lot of ramifications for
them. Everything. It's everything.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line, thedailyline.net. Mike, good to see you. Thanks.
Great to be here.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Dweezil Zappa, the great guitar player and son of Frank Zappa, is touring his dad's music. He's got it's an amazing story. Not a great one. He's been touring for 10, 15 years with a tribute band to his dad, to Frank Zappa's music, called Zappa Plays Zappa. And he got into a huge fight with his family and the family trust over the name, over the essentially his siblings, his parents, his mom died, are essentially trademarked the name Zappa, or the concept of Frank Zappa, and are charging Dweezil Zappa to play his dad's music on tour. It's getting real nasty.
You're saying,
man,
that Moon Unit's money from the Valley Girl single hasn't held out?
She's on Dweezil's side. I get on the rabbit hole, man. Just look it up. Say Zappa Family Trust on Google, and you'll be reading hundreds and hundreds of words about the Zappa family that you didn't necessarily care about. But we're going to talk to Dweezil Zappa. He's coming to the Concord Music Hall tomorrow night in Logan Square with his tour, playing his dad's music. So we'll talk with him coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, TJ Jagodowski and Abby McEnany return to play the worst. This, of course, where we complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. We got good prizes tonight, too. We've got Lou Malnati gift certificate, of course, and also a pair of tickets to see Young Frankenstein.
Wow.
The musical. So that's coming up as well tonight. And, of course, 11 o'clock postgame for the Cubs NLDS Game 4. David Singer in studio. Good to see you, buddy.
Hi. Good to see you, too.
David Singer, of course, we've had him on the program. I feel like this has been, for regular listeners to the Download, David has come into studio a couple times now to talk about the movie he's been working on. Longtime musician here in town, now filmmaker, editor. I mean, really a renaissance man. David Singer's movie, Imperfections, is going to be at the Chicago International Film Festival this Friday here in Chicago. David, congratulations, number one. And it's got to feel great that the movie's finally done.
It really does. I feel like a giraffe that has been gestating its young for, I don't know, I assume giraffes have a long gestation period. I got to admit, I don't really know. I'm out over my skis. But yeah, it feels really good to finally get the movie out into the world where people can see it. And we couldn't be happier about it.
You know, last time we talked, you were in the editing process. That really was the toughest part of it. You were talking about just the idea of having to pore over this and whether or not this is good and that kind of stuff. I mean, you wrote, you directed, and you were involved in the editing, did the music for this. I mean, talk about the process of the sort of the finale part of finishing this movie.
Okay, well, my partner in this movie is my brother, John.
Right.
And our editor is a very talented guy named Michael Heffler. And so the problem is that I've never done this before. So I really wrote like a movie and a half. And then I shot like a movie and a quarter. And then I was like, God, that's just too much. But it's very plot heavy. So I had to go through and be like, okay, you can lose that. Imagine a Rubik's Cube if it was an unfixed number of squares on each side. So, I mean, you know, it's a sort of arbitrary idea about that's it. That's the definitive version of what we've done. But, you know, John and Michael and I kind of sat in the room, and I cut 55 crucial seconds out of this movie 2.5 weeks ago, and the movie is definitely better as a result of it.
What I love is that I know that we talked about this last time you were in about the editing process, and I saw the movie today, I was expecting like 6 montages. Like just, you know, you're just shoving it all in, you putting a guitar track over it and be like, this is how we're going to do it. But you didn't. You stayed true to it, and you told a great story, and we'll get into the story after the news, but a great story about an interest. I mean, essentially, is a caper.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Yeah, and you know, told a great story about life here in Chicago, surrounded by this sort of jewelry diamond caper.
Thank you very much. I mean, we tried to, you know, there's a thing that happens with movies today that it's so competitive to get into movie theaters and so competitive for people's attention on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu, whatever it is, and that the impulse of a lot of people is to try to distill what they're doing down to one specific genre. It's a vampire movie, or it's a World War II movie, or it's a broad comedy about a fraternity, or it's a, you know, a dark night of the soul. And the kind of movies that I have always really responded to are all of those things, that I didn't want it to be just a comedy or just a caper.
Right, right.
There are any number of movies in the 70s that were really inspirational to me, particularly a movie called The Silent Partner with Elliot Gould. There are a lot of, I like when all those things come together. And I think that's how you make a really three-dimensional story. So it is about a caper that takes place in the Diamond District, but it's also about a girl and her mother. And it's also about how our ideas about success and what the future is going to be like sort of change as mm-hmm. we get older. And I didn't feel like it had to be one of those things. I thought it could be all of those things. And since it was just John and me and this wonderful woman named Christina Verazzi, who helps us, mm-hmm. who produced the movie with us and got the whole thing together, that because it was just us, there was nobody on top of us in the food chain, so we just did whatever we wanted.
Well, it sounds a lot like your career. I mean, you've done a tremendous amount of stuff in music, but you've also done stuff with Steppenwolf. I mean, obviously, you've been a renaissance. I always say the renaissance man, because you've done so many different things, and you refuse to sort of be pigeonholed into one genre of work, and that sounds a lot like what you just talked about.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not because I'm like bucking the system so much as it's just like I get bored easily and I don't like to be told what to do. So I've like carefully constructed a life where no one gets to tell me what to do any of the time.
That's nice.
Which is, you know, it's totally cool if you're into waiting tables for a really long time, which I did to make a living. But I'm out on the other side of it now. And yeah, now I get to be extremely fortunate and do a lot of different things at the same time.
Well, the film is called Imperfections. It's at the Chicago International Film Festival this Friday, 4 o'clock.
Right? And then it's actually, so the world premiere is Friday at 4 o'clock at the Chicago International Film Festival. And then Saturday morning, I get up and fly to Austin, where it plays the Austin Film Festival on Saturday and Monday. And then we fly back to Chicago, and it shows twice again in Chicago on Jeez. Saturday the 22nd and Sunday the 23rd.
Where's the best place that they can get that information? Like what website?
You could go – the best place to get the information is probably from the Imperfections Twitter,
okay.
which is at I-M-P-E-R-F-X-I-O-N-S.
Making it easy. Making it easy.
Well, I mean, Imperfections was taken. How about this? Go to imperfectionsfilm.com.
There you go. Imperfections
but I would say film. That everybody in the broadcast radius of this beautiful building that we're in right now should come to the River East 21 and the Chicago International Film Festival on Friday at 4 p.m. to see our movie. And I really encourage you to get a pass for the festival. It is an extraordinary compilation
of
films the world over.
We'll talk about the festival. We'll also talk about Imperfections. We'll do all that coming up after the news here. We'll get an update from Rob Martier, and we'll continue with David Singer in studio. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's the download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 11 o'clock postgame, True Blue playoff push. Sponsored by Wind Trust Checking. Adam Hoge and Mark Carmen give us the postgame to tonight's game, which is looking bottom of the third, 1-1 tie. So there you go. All right. In studio with me tonight, David Singer. He is the filmmaker behind the he's the writer, director, musician, I guess. You did all the music for the movie as well.
I did. Well, I mean, there's some songs in it that from the 70s, but
it sounded,
the rest of it is me.
This is it. David Singer, the movie's Imperfections, its world premiere is going to be at the Chicago International Film Festival this Friday at 4 o'clock. Then it's going to Austin. Then it's coming back to the Chicago International Film Festival next Saturday, the 22nd, the big hubbub.
I got a bunch of the cast coming in the 22nd. Mary Lou Henner will be here. Virginia Call, who's the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Zach McGowan, Chicago and Chelsea Ross will be there. David Pasquese. a bunch of the people who populate the movie.
We talked a lot in the last couple times you were on. We talked about the process, about getting an independent film made, about the editing, the music, just really the DIY spirit of this movie. Let's talk about the movie.
Yes.
Where does the story come from? What pushed you? What motivated you to write a caper about the diamond jewelry? Jeweler's Row here on Wabash.
Okay, so the main character in the movie takes a job as a runner for a diamond importer. So those guys have a longstanding practice of when they need to move stones from one place to another, instead of hiring security companies, which get robbed habitually and often, they hire young, pretty women, and they stick a whole bunch of expensive gems in their pocket, and they tell them to be discreet and go from one place to another. This is a real thing. And I knew somebody who did this job, and it was insane to think that this person could be running around downtown with more money in her pocket than she would make in 5 years.
Right,
it was vast. And so the kernel of it had been percolating for some time. My brother John and I made a short film a few years ago called Advantage Weinberg, and it did well. And we were like, we want to make a feature. What are we going to do next? And so I wanted to write something that I thought that we could pull off. So I had, I pulled this out of the idea basket of deplorables, and I started, finessing the idea about what this would be and what kind of movie it would be and what the tone would be. And John helped me with a couple of important story points. And here we are. We have this movie.
Let's talk about the main character. She not only takes the job as a runner in this case, but she's an actress in Chicago and has to deal. Talk about developing that character. Talk about where she comes from.
So the main character is an out-of-work actress who's sort of realizing that her chance at stardom may be passing her by. She's 30 and, maybe it would have happened already. And so she decides that she has to put money together to get to Hollywood to take one last stab before it goes. She's sleeping on her mother's couch and grinding out auditions. The mother is played by Mary Lou Henner, and Mary Lou Henner gets her daughter a job at her boyfriend's diamond importer. Her boyfriend is played by Ed Begley Jr.
Right.
And so the idea is that she really feels like time is ticking and she has to get a stake together so she can get to Hollywood and give it one more chance. Now the question is, where does that come from? Like everybody else in the movie, it's me. So it's I have been a musician and a writer and God knows what else for a really long time. And, mostly a musician in the early part of my life. And I woke up one day at like 34 and I was like, if I was going to be a rock star, I think it probably would have happened by now. I think that the odds of me like having a meteoric rise at this point are fairly slim. Plus, I never wrote a song with more than two choruses. That's another. We'll get into that next time I'm here. But I feel like there's that. I'm sort of obsessed with the idea of success and how we define success and how that idea of success evolves as we get older and how we imagine our future is going to play out. When you're 17, you feel like, I'm destined for something amazing. I know that it's only a matter of time until something incredible is going to happen, if you're fortunate. And then you get to be 40 and you're like, I'm not so sure that thing's going to happen. And so there are people populating imperfections who are at different stages of that realization of taking stock of their lives and who they are and where they're going and how the rest of their lives are going to play out.
And that plays a role in every significant character. I mean, there's the growth and time seem to be sort of the underlying thoughts, the idea of not only growing and being someone. I think of the main character's boyfriend, Ray, as someone who's, he's trying to grow out of some, the anger management issues and things that he's had in the past. That's how we're introduced to him. But time. Each character is dealing with time in one way. Mary Lou Henner wants to do something, before she's an old lady. The main character, she wants to be an actress who, get to L.A., but time is ticking. So there is this element of time and how it plays out in every single character in this movie.
That's absolutely true, and it's certainly something that we were thinking about when we made the movie. But I would like to also say that we made a point of not making a movie where it's a bunch of people sitting around talking about their feelings.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I want I wanted it to be serious and I wanted it to be about stuff, but I don't want you to be thinking about that while you're watching the movie. It's supposed to be funny and an engrossing caper movie where you're wondering what's going to happen next. And hopefully if we pulled it off, and some of the early returns indicate that maybe we did, that you are surprised by stuff that happens. And there are a couple, the first screening we had, there's a big reveal and the whole audience gasped. And it was like an elephant got off my chest, because I was like, well, what happens if nobody thinks that that's surprising? Or like, oh, I knew that was going to happen. But the it plays, or it should play, or it's intended to play as entertainment. And the rest of the stuff is there. And I hope you don't notice it.
Yeah, but the beauty of any film or any piece of art that we're going to go see are the layers. And, you know, I understand the idea that you're like, yeah, you don't want people to go into listening to this radio program and go into the studio and be like, I need to look at all the layers, you know, or watch the movie. They want to be entertained. But there is something about the elements that are the secondary storylines, whether it be everybody longing for something or time, that is well constructed.
I mean, thank you.
But that's a good thing. I mean,
definitely a good thing. Yeah. I just don't want it to be boring. That's I don't think it is. But I mean, I don't know. I've been working on it in a dark room for 3 years. Who knows? I don't think it's boring. You saw it.
I saw it. Yeah. I saw it. The 70s music alone. Wabash alone.
Yeah.
Like, just hanging out in Wabash the entire
movie.
Yes,
we wanted to make a Chicago movie, because we're Chicago people, that looks like actual Chicago and not like postcard Chicago.
Right.
So it's The Hideout and Lost Lake and Lincoln Square Lanes, which burned down like 5 minutes after we left. And the Jesse White Tumblers and Wabash and like the Chicago the way that we know it, with like filthy alleys and street lights and the L train and the real place that we live. A lot of that comes from incredible cinematography by a guy named Drew Wade, who this is his first feature, and he did an absolutely extraordinary job. And our production designer, Audrey Sirwat, who made all of that stuff with like the 75 cents I had to give her, and she really made it look fantastic.
So, David Singer's my guest. The movie's Imperfections. You can find out more about it at imperfectionsfilm.com. It's going to be at the Chicago International Film Festival on Friday at 4 o'clock at River East, right around the corner here. And then it's going to be back on stage again. It's going to be showing a couple times, but the big one is Saturday when the cast comes in, Saturday the 22nd.
That's correct.
8 o'clock.
There are tickets available for these screenings at ChicagoInternationalFilmFestival.com. If you go there, there will be links where you can buy tickets and attend the movie that I've been talking about for, I don't know, 5 years.
We've talked about it on the program. I love the ability that you've come back and you've taken us through the process. Now you're at the process where the film is finished and you're looking for distribution. You're talking about film festivals. Obviously, this is a huge, to have your world premiere at the Chicago International Film Festival is a big deal.
Oh, it's a huge deal for us. I mean, we are swimming in deep water. They were very enthusiastic about the movie, which was so validating to us. I mean,
talk about that process. Talk about like getting ready to submit to festivals and what goes into that.
So the process is, it's me and John and Christina and Michael Heffler and all of these talented people who came and did this movie for $5 so we could make this incredible thing together. And that's what's really amazing about something like this, is that it requires so many people coming together to make this one thing that we're really proud of. And then you realize, now that they've democratized the tools of making it, that everybody can shoot a movie on their iPhone, that everybody does. So there's so many movies, and how do you differentiate what you have from everyone else? I mean, we could put the movie up on iTunes in 2 days, but we don't have any publicity money. You know, I don't know how we could get millions of people to know about it. So right now we're trying to figure out what the path is to get
What's the traditional path? Take the new 2.0 out of it. What's the traditional path?
Well, the traditional path is that a studio with a lot of money decides they want to make a movie. So let's say they want to make Iron Man. They go in advance to AFM, or they go to Cannes, or they go someplace like that, and they pre-sell the foreign distribution rights. Before it's even made, to every country in the world. So somebody in Brazil pays $3 million to be the distributor in Brazil, and somebody in Togo pays $150 or whatever. I don't know what it is, but they pre-sell all the money, and then they take all that money and they put it in a pile and they use it to make the movie.
Oh, interesting.
So they've completely mitigated their risk. And then they also, you know, a big movie opens on 2,000 screens or 3,000 screens or whatever it is.
They're going to get their money back, yeah.
They're going to get their money back, probably, especially if it's an action movie. It can do really well in Asia. Or, I mean, you know, it is an international community of people selling movies.
Now let's talk about imperfections. How does an indie film like yours that's made homegrown with you guys here in Chicago, how do you distribute the film?
Well, we start by raising the money. And we had a bunch of extremely generous people who helped us put the money together. But it was a lot of small checks that we put into one big pile. My brother John is a very talented and seasoned commercial producer who knew a lot about that. Christina has a lot of independent film experience. She produced Lost River and one of the Harold and Kumar movies. And like she's the person in Chicago if you're making a movie that you talk to. So we just kind of put everybody together. And so we make this movie and now the movie's done. So we take it to film festivals and we have an agent and we start talking to distributors and hopefully they're all so excited about the movie that there's a huge like fight on the floor. The River East 21.
Well, let me ask, is that how do you get it in festivals and then do you sort of invite distributors and others to come see it in the festival?
Yes.
Is that how it works?
So I'll say this. So 5 years ago or 8 years ago, it was more like you get your movie into Telluride or Chicago or whatever, and you get a bunch of distributors come to town, I assume with monocles and checkbooks, and they like go and watch a bunch of movies and they decide, I could make money off of this movie. But now it seems like they're like, oh, you got into that festival. Your movie must be good. Send me a link.
They don't even come.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll come. What do I know about it? I'm some guy who just made a movie. So hopefully they come.
So I love it. So, okay, so the goal is to get into festivals to essentially work as publicity for you. With a shoestring budget and the ability to distribute and to spend on publicity, you need festivals. You need to be able to have a good enough product to get into festivals so that festivals garner some attention.
Yes. More specifically, we're driven by – we just want people to see this thing that we made and to have festivals – like the Chicago International, which is such a historic and important thing, validate this thing that we made artistically, is a huge victory for us. So I don't want to think about it in terms of commercialism, which is why I'm not at all rich. But, you know, we made this thing. John and I did this together and with Christina's help, and we want to get it out into the world and we want people to see it because we're really proud of it. And hopefully through this process, somebody else sees it who says, I want to help you get this movie to lots and lots of other people.
Well, you should be proud. I mean, the process, I mean, we've talked about it up to this point. The finished product, which I watched today, is great. I mean, it's really fun to know the stories of you being able to put it together in the process and to actually see the finished product. And you, too, can see the finished product at the Chicago International Film Festival. The movie's Imperfections. It is showing on Friday night or Friday 4 o'clock.
Friday 4 p.m. at the River East 21.
Then it's going to Austin. Then it comes back to Chicago at the same festival, the International Film Festival, on the 22nd, 8 o'clock. You can get all this information at imperfectionsfilm.com. David Singer, the director, the writer, the musician, the man behind the film, along with his brother John. Thanks so much for coming in. And you got to come back and tell us how all the festivals went.
I'll come tomorrow if you want me to. It's fine. I'm around. Yeah, no, you've been very generous having me back to keep telling the same story. And I promise I will come back and let you know how it goes. And then when the movie's like out in the world, then I'll come back.
But when the movie's out in the world and it did really well, then it'll be like, you know what? I'm really busy. I can't come back on the download. Can I do a phoner? That's what's going to happen.
No.
I know. That's
no,
exactly
no.
What's
you just
happen.
Have to feed me. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Good to see you, bud.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.
Coming up, Dweezil Zappa joins us, guitar player, son to Frank Zappa. He's playing his dad's music at Concord Music Hall tomorrow night. We will talk with him about that show. And also we'll play The Worst with TJ Jagodowski and Abby McEnany. They're both in studio, and we will complain about the worst things in our society for pizza, right? That's pretty much how it goes. So 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up tomorrow night at the Concord Music Hall in Logan Square, a musical history lesson, if you will. Sit back and enjoy the wild music of the legendary Frank Zappa.
Wednesday, I watched a riot. I seen the cops out on the street. Watch them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat. Listen to reports about the whiskey passing round. Seen the smoke and fire and the market burning down. Watch while everybody on your street would take a turn. They'll stomp and smash and bash and crash and slash and bust and burn. And I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day.
It's been 50 years since the release of Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention album Freak Out, which was one of rock music's first concept albums. Frank Zappa is known as an experimental rock singer-songwriter. He died in 1993. He came to fame in the 60s and 70s, mainly as a cult favorite, although some of his music did hit the radio airwaves. But if you ask anyone under the age of, say, I don't know, 30, they may not know who Frank Zappa is, and that's where his son Dweezil Zappa comes in. Dweezil's been playing his father's music in a tribute band called Zappa Plays Zappa, and where he explains his dad's artistic vision, almost like a guided tour. But that name garnered cease and desist letters from the Zappa Family Trust, which is run partially by his brother, Ahmet. A legal battle over the music and the name birthed a new name. 50 Years of Frank. Dweezil Zappa Plays Whatever the F He Wants. The cease and desist tour. And Dweezil Zappa joins us on the line now. Dweezil, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk about the music. I'm really interested in it. I'm a big fan of your dad's music. But I want to start, I guess, with the fight with your family over the name. Talk about that. Did I set that up right in the intro? I mean, is this really a fight over the name and the royalties that surround your dad's name?
I mean, ultimately, what's going on is I was touring as Zappa Plays Zappa for a little over 10 years. And during that time, my mother trademarked the name Zappa Plays Zappa and claimed ownership of the name. And then she did not pay any of the T-shirt sales revenue to me, which she was supposed to do in the contract that we had. And so at the point where she passed away, there was a battle over this money that was supposed to have been paid for 10 years. And the new people coming in, Ahmet and Diva, said, well, actually, we're not going to pay that. We're going to continue to take 100% of the merch. And if you don't let us, we'll send you a cease and desist letter based on you using the name Zappa Plays Zappa, which we own as the trust. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous because I'm also a member of the trust, but I'm not a voting member, so to speak. So I have no say in what they do or how they do it. They cut their nose off to spite their face, you know. So I did offer them the chance to have, I said, well, why don't you guys put official Zappa merch on and pay me 50% of the revenue? And they said, nope, we want 100%. And they still refused. And so I just did a tour that I changed the name to Dweezil Zappa Plays the Music of Frank Zappa. And they sent me another cease and desist letter saying I couldn't use that because Frank Zappa is trademarked. And so that was a completely ridiculous situation because it's not with any merit to do that based on the usage that I was using it for. And rather than keep playing the game, I just changed the tour to my name, Dweezil Zappa, and then I'll play whatever the F I want, the cease and desist tour, because it became so stupid that they just kept sending letter after letter.
Is it hard for you, I mean, to have interview after interview and you know, do you have the story float in the New York Times about, you know, your family feud? I mean, is it difficult for you as someone who, you know, is close with your siblings to be in a position like this where money is playing out in such a public way?
Well, it's not my preferred set of circumstances, but when it all comes down to it, it's about the music. I love the music. I want to be able to share the music and play the music with the band that I have and have people come out and enjoy it. And what we do is expose the music to new generations of people. and there's income that comes from that that already goes to the trust in the form of all the ASCAP royalties that's paid at every concert. So the trust is always getting something from these shows anyway, but they just want more and more and more. And what they don't realize is I'm the only one that's actually doing anything to promote, you know, what our father actually did. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a weird thing that, that comes down to no good deed goes unpunished, you know?
We're talking with Dweezil Zappa about his show that's at Concord Music Hall in Logan Square tomorrow night. It's called 50 Years of Frank. Dweezil Zappa plays whatever the F he wants, the cease and desist tour. Let's talk about the music. Let's get into it. I mean, this is really 50 years since the legendary album Freak Out came out, a double album, concept album. What was so special in 1966 about Freak Out? What was it about this record that is worth a whole tour sort of around 50 years later?
You got to put it into perspective as to what the musical and social climate was back in 1966. And also keep in mind that Frank was only 26 years old when he made this double album. The stuff that is on this record is unlike anything that the world had ever heard at that time. And if you listen to it, even by today's standards, it's still so far ahead of the curve that it's really music from the future. And he did so many things on just that particular record that still stand the test of time in terms of a piece of audio art. You know, the one really great example on the record to me that is so different is a song called Who Are the Brain Police. Mm-hmm. There's some distortion on that. And at the time, distortion was very, very new to the recording industry. There wasn't really an amplifier that would distort. The only way you could distort something was to record it improperly, like overload the tape machine or a channel in the console, which was typically something that you would try to avoid because you didn't want it to distort. But Frank went way overboard with this massive distortion on Who Are the Brain Police. And that song itself is just such a curiosity. I mean, you hear it and it just, even now it sounds bizarre, but you can only imagine what mm-hmm. would have happened if a 12-year-old would have gone into a record store and paid for this record themselves and brought it home and put it on in their living room, and their parents come racing in as if they've just heard a horrible car accident and want to make sure everyone's okay, you know, and they're like, what the hell is this? You will never play this again.
And there was a lot of fear around the culture changing. I mean, obviously, 1966, you talk about a lot of people will associate your dad's music with almost like LSD trips, drug-induced music, or at least that's how it was categorized by the man, if you will. But the concept being that it was something that was way in left field for what the culture was doing at the time.
Yes, well, the absurdity around all that, true, is that my dad didn't do any drugs. Maybe his audience did drugs listening to some of his music, but he himself was just making music purely out of creativity and was not drug or alcohol induced. And he actually made fun of the culture that was doing drugs. And all those things are in the early Mothers of Invention records. So it's quite funny that he got the reputation that he did when he was completely against all of that stuff.
Dweezil, where did your dad's creativity come from? To be a musician and someone who's recording music at the age of 26, like you said, and in 1966, where did the ideas, the creativity come from to expand, to experiment, to try something new, to go against the grain?
He started off as a composer. He was very interested in becoming a classical composer, and he went to the library to learn how to do all of the musical notation. He used to just draw stuff that looked like music, and then he decided, oh, I'm going to try to really figure out what this is for real. And he started writing orchestral music when he was 11 or 12, and he just taught himself how to do all that stuff. The rock band part of it became a way to facilitate being able to work in the context of orchestral music, he would use a rock band to play some of his music and conduct the band almost like it was an orchestra. But then eventually that led to enough money for him to be able to work with orchestras. And he did make a few albums with some orchestras. And people don't realize that that costs a lot of money to do that. And you don't necessarily make it back when you do a recording. I remember he did a recording with the London Symphony Orchestra back in the middle 80s. And it cost him $500,000
wow.
to have them perform this music. And that was only just so he could hear it. And I remember he wasn't even that satisfied because they didn't rehearse enough.
Well, I mean, for you, your connection to the music, to your dad's music, you know, because you become almost like the Zappa historian to be able to go in deep, not just with traditional songs, but to look at some of the deep cuts, but also the lyrics and the arrangements and the music. I mean, you really have immersed yourself in all of the artistic vision that your dad presents. Why do that? What is it about going that deep that propels you creatively with your music?
I think the whole thing started with, once my father passed, I noticed that there were a lot of people under the age of 30 that didn't really know anything about my dad's music. And I felt that was a shame because he had accomplished so much and his music was underappreciated and underrecognized for the achievements within the music industry in terms of what he did live on stage, how he used equipment to make shows sound better. He was really at the forefront of technology and really trying to make sure that whatever got recorded sounded the best that it possibly could. He had his own mobile recording studio that he would bring with him everywhere. And in those days, you didn't have a laptop that could do it. You had to bring a whole truck
right.
that would get shipped over in a container if he was going over to Europe, you know, and this is like the back of a semi, you know. And so, I mean, he was so committed to the whole process of making sure the quality was pristine. You know, I just felt like there wasn't anybody that operated that way and that I thought generations that didn't know about it should know something about it. So that's when I started the Zappa Plays Zappa thing. And there's so much music to learn and perform that we're still doing it after all these years because we just barely touched the, you know, tip of the iceberg.
That's amazing.
With the amount of music that he made. But ultimately, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to accomplish with this was kind of what you were talking about in the beginning, which was give people almost a little history lesson so that they could have more of an appreciation of what my dad really did, because I think it was too easy for the casual exposure type of listener to get the impression that he was a novelty artist if they've only ever heard songs like Valley Girl or Don't Eat the Yellow Snow,
right.
or things that might have gotten on the radio. That's not reflective of the majority of the music in his catalog. So, you know, saying what I was about him being a classical composer, that's really more of the majority of his music arranged for rock instrumentation. And so that's the stuff I focused most heavily on over the years. And that's what we continue to do.
Dweezil Zappa is going to be on stage tomorrow night at the Concord Music Hall in Logan Square with his tour, 50 Years of Frank. Dweezil Zappa plays whatever the F he wants, the cease and desist tour. Dweezil, thanks so much for taking some time out. Good luck with the show tomorrow.
Thanks. One other thing to mention is that Ike Willis will be joining us tomorrow on stage as well. And he is one of the vocalists that many of the fans have come to love over the years. And he's never performed with us before.
Wow.
So this will be a debut of epic proportions tomorrow
night.
There you
go. That's great. We're going to play The Worst coming up here a little bit early. 9:30 start tonight after the 9:30 news. TJ Jagodowski, Abby McEnany in studio. It was where we complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call. What's the worst? I feel like there's going to be a lot of politically themed the worsts, right? Doesn't it feel like that's going to come up?
But better than bathroom humor.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, I guess that's not a home run. That's I don't know what's happening there. Sorry, I was watching the Cubs game there. A question of whether or not a San Francisco Giant home run.
Oh.
But they're saying it hit the wall. It didn't hit the wall, that kind of thing. But all right. Hold composure. Composure, Cubs fans.
Bruce Bochy will throw the replay flag on this one for sure, Bob.
They should get the little red flags, don't you think, football style? He'll throw that out there.
You know me, guys. I've always been a longtime proponent of the T-shirt launcher. So I think if each manager had some sort of like high-powered T-shirt launcher, could hit the umpire in the head. Yeah. I want to do a replay.
I don't really – I guess in San Francisco, those the walls, the brick walls are in the back. Like, those are actually the walls. So if it hits that, that may not actually be a home run. That's what they're talking about, which is weird. Yeah, learn something new every day. All right, TJ and Abby coming up here. We'll play the worst coming up after the 9:30 news.
It's going down, y'all. The worst come my people should come first. You know the deal. Worst come the worst. When worst come the worst, my people should come first.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200, the number to call to complain about the worst things in our society for prizes. We've got some tonight. We got tickets to Young Frankenstein, which is playing a musical. It's playing out at Metropolis in Arlington Heights. And also we've got some Lou Malnati's gift certificates, some pizza to give away. Abby likes that. Abby Meganini, TJ Jagodowski back in studio. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Good to see you, brother.
Thanks for having us.
We have to bring, opposite of Cubs game, you got to bring in some serious A talent, man.
Serious counter-programming going on right now.
It's like who's got the star power to pull people away from a playoff game? I think it's you two. Both great improvisers, comedians here in Chicago. They have nothing to promote for the fact that they are on this program. Although TJ is in the new show Shrink, which is shooting here.
Yeah. Our good friends Ted Trimper and Timmy Baltz and a couple other folks are shooting a TV show for CISO, which I think is a new network. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a TV show called Shrink. I'm not sure when it's coming out, but just based on the fellas doing it and the ladies
Chicago
and
talent.
Stuff that they brought in, it should be pretty good. And it's being all shot right here, so it's you can feel good about the show, if only for your hometown pride.
There you go. And you can see TJ as well on the first scene of the new Netflix show, Easy, Joe Swanberg.
Oh,
we just had Joe in here this week.
A lot of sex in that program.
He was saying that he was the one regret. I asked him all about regrets, is that he couldn't get you into a sex scene. That's what
He didn't ask. Oh, if he's saying that, he's.
He told. He didn't ask. He told.
I have a bunch of my own footage I would have been willing to donate.
Gonzo, right. You're an improviser. You're in the moment. You're in the moment. All right, so 312-981-7200. Let's play the worst. Let's start off with Pete Zimmerman, as we do every week with the worst. Pete, how are you, my man?
I am wonderful.
All right.
You know what the worst is, what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Those plastic foil to-go containers. You get from a restaurant, they deliver those foil things with the plastic thing on top, and they take out the food, and then you can never get that plastic on just right. You're trying to, like, tuck everything in the side. You're like, and it never just goes right.
It never works again.
No.
There's probably a ranking when it comes to to-go food containers, one of which the brown paper kind of Chinese food kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I hate that thing.
Why?
I don't like it because I just can, after a while, it'll wear out after you shut it once or twice, and then it won't shut anymore, and then you just feel like you're just wasting food.
Pete, how many times are you trying to use that thing? You just keeping that as like a ersatz Tupperware in your house, or
no? You get some pasta and something with some heft to it. You know, it flops around. It doesn't really. The foil doesn't hold the meatiness of the dish.
Absolutely.
You got to dig in, my friend.
The meatiness of the dish. Coming up next. I said the meatiness. Is that right?
The meatiness, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. All right, Abby, what do you got for the worst?
Let's see. You know those, like, kids on commercials who are, like, overly cute and they're not, and you just are like, you know what? just driving me nuts. Is this too much? And listen, also, I don't have kids, but I love them. My two nephews are why I get out of bed in the morning, so no angry calls. I don't hate children, except for those little, especially those like, do you think I'm cute? You know what? I don't. And I blame your parents, and I blame the casting director.
I'm trying to remember the commercial in which the kid goes,
Yeah. Didn't that make you mad?
If I saw that commercial, it probably
Seriously,
would.
I mean, it's outrageous.
You mean like when they dress up the kids and they're supposed to be cute, like almost like yeah. I don't know, like a Toys R Us type
Yeah,
thing
I know,
something?
But also like, well, TJ and I were talking earlier, like, remember that girl who was on the Welch's commercial a long time ago? Yeah, Welch's, you know what? I've had it. And then there's also one now for like a... There's one now.
15 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, listen, never forget. Now there's one for like a babysitting service. And, you know, God bless. Those kids are great. And I support kids and their education. But honestly, let's have some real kids on there. Am I right, yeah. Pete? Pete hears me.
Pete hears you.
I started out hard.
You did. No, the sad thing is those kids are making more money than The Room.
Yeah, sure.
First of all, no doubt. I think... any callers on that one?
There's a lot of callers on that. Yeah. No one's called up. They get where you're coming from. All right, TJ, what do you got for the worst?
Mine is I heard another one of these today. It reminded me of the genre of commercial that is basically just chumming the waters for people to join class action lawsuits. And the one today was asking for people who used a certain product and then had a bleeding event.
That's what they say, a bleeding.
A bleeding. You use this thing and then had a bleeding event. Did you have a bleeding event?
Did you bleed?
Yeah, I guess. But anywhere, you know, like anywhere like an to event. Any degree, maybe, you know, like.
Maybe an event is like, it was a dramatic, like, where you're at a point, oh my God, I'm bleeding.
Right. Or yeah, you had one and they're like, well, I guess there's nothing I can do about about this. And then the commercial comes out like, I did. I had a bleeding event.
Maybe a bleeding event is actually something that you send an evite for and, you know, you invite people yes. to. And that's what they're looking for is people who are, maybe it's like an underground thing. Like,
right.
Like from the movie Blade.
Yeah, or you blew out your transvaginal mesh and decided to do nothing yeah. about it until yeah. I'm gonna wait for a commercial. I don't know what to call.
Actually, really that's why I was unable to do the worst last Tuesday because I had blown out my transvaginal mesh and I had to fast forward to. But TJ luckily was able to reschedule.
Yeah,
so I appreciate that very much.
And refer you to a
yeah
a great specialist.
Yeah, I'm now in a class action suit. I have high hopes because what right, is better right. in America than a litigious society?
That's right. 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get to the texts and calls. If you want to get in on the action, play some worse. 312-981-7200. We got some good stuff to give away. Stay with us.
It's going down.
Playing the worst here, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? This one, 513. When your vegan wife orders a grilled cheese without the cheese. Hey, that's called toast.
Wait, did they write, hey, yeah. that's called toast? Oh, man, what's that guy's number? That's hilarious. Or maybe it's a woman.
It could be, yeah.
Amen. Anyways, first of all, that whoever's ordering grilled cheese without cheese, they're like not taking advantage of their money.
That's
I mean,
true.
They're just wasting money,
well,
man.
I have that issue, too. I always get into it with the, my wife will sometimes, she'll
my
order.
Wife.
My wife. She'll order a BLT or a club, and she'll say, I don't want the turkey, right? Turkey BLT at mm-hmm. like Hannah's Pretzel or something like that. And then they charge me the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You know, they just take the turkey off there. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Isn't there like a weight or a meat or something that can at least get me 75 cents off on this thing?
Yeah, if you're removing like yeah. the signature yeah. item.
Like, I mean, there's a cost for that turkey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And the savings are not being passed on yeah. to me.
If I go see the Doobie Brothers, no Michael McDonald, I want a couple of bones back,
right.
you know? Like,
I don't understand.
Manfred Mann, but right. no Manfred Mann right. or Sly and the Family Stone and no Sly. If I'm just...
You
go Family Stone.
I want to pay Family Stone prices. I feel the same way about sporting events. If the mm-hmm. Bears have a backup quarterback or they have all these injuries, then they should be taking 10-15% off the ticket
yeah.
price.
Yeah.
TJ Jagodowski, Abby McEnany in studio tonight. We're playing the worst. 312-981-7200. Got some good stuff. Let me go through some of the texts here. A lot of the texts are hilarious. You know what's the worst? That relief pitcher Law. I guess there's a guy on the Giants who's like this guy who's in the game now. Or he was warming up. I guess yesterday he was like the guy waving the towel in the dugout, and they gave him his own camera essentially. Like he's like the rally guy for the team.
I hadn't seen him, but I heard on people talking about him on the radio today in unflattering terms that he looked like a young John Lackey.
There you go. Yeah, so he's not a favorite here in Chicago. 773. You're gonna like this one, Abby. Okay, this one's for you. 773. The worst is all the freaks, perverts, and foul-smelling psychos I have to ride with on the CTA.
How dare you? First of all, I have a name. It is Abby McEnany. I mean, come on, man. I don't know.
All of those things in one.
I mean, why not?
You're the whole package.
I'm very aware of my identity. I'm not shying away.
You must just think the world of yourself. Yeah. You're the one not freak, not like, come on. You're the golden child of the entire CTA, like, circulatory system.
I agree with 773. I get on a train and I'm like, clear it. You know, I need this cleared.
You guys are great for our society. I honor that.
Pay a little extra bucks for the sleeping car.
I would be okay with a CTA sleeping car, like a red line where I paid like a $250. What is it, $225?
That's what you pay now, dude.
What is that?
I don't know. You can't tell
I'm
anymore.
I'm out of touch with the middle class.
With the venture... With the Venture card, you can't tell.
Yeah,
they don't
right.
tell you what your what your balance is or anything.
If it was like okay, let's jack it up. Let's make it like a $650.
Mm-hmm.
I'd do a sleeper car, or a beer car, something nice, a nicer red line.
You think that you're going to be in your own car with a beer cart for $650? You are a fantastical dreamer.
I was getting on the other day at the Merch Mart, and there was this kid just standing there at the turnstile. And he goes, oh, hey, man, you got an extra swipe? like it's just that. Like, it's just some abstract thing he was asking. That he wasn't asking for almost $3. He was just asking for an extra swipe, you know? Like, he had placed no value on it, so why should I, you know?
Like, you care. Just be cool.
It was like asking for a wink. Hey, man, you know, like... You got one of those extra? Like, it wasn't a hug, man. You're talking about, like, cash
and
money.
Then,
did
you have to go to your standby, which is, sorry, man, I ain't got nothing.
Yeah, you know,
right?
Like,
swiping
about to use it, clearly.
Oh, my God.
815 says, when you try, here's a good Halloween one. When you try to scare your grandmother on Halloween and she ends up hitting you out of excitement.
Well, you know what? I think that's a blessing that she didn't die. So let's, like, you know, reframe that. That Nana is still living. But amen.
One of Beth's favorite things is some, like, I think it was a Halloween prank where some guy's hiding in a garbage can and pops out in a mask. And instead of, like, the dude being frightened, he just jacks him. His first response is not to run from fear, but to, like, eliminate it. And he catches him square chin where you can see it, like, fold under. And the guy goes cold. Just, like, prank, garbage can prank. Look it up. You will not be sorry.
Google garbage can prank. Skip through the first four. It's like the fifth or sixth one. 630's got a restaurant one. I work in a very busy restaurant in the financial district. The worst is when people just walk past our host stand and say, hey, do I just grab a table? What actual restaurant do you just grab a table? Mm. Sure, I'm just standing here telling you to keep walking past me and grab a table.
Ugh.
Yeah.
When I would turn those signs as a kid, the ones that said, please wait to be seated, as I walked back, I would turn those around to see
to
yourself.
See your
brainstorm. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know this. This is from an old sort of story I was working on about this. Is interesting. Bears Packers, right? So we were talking about why people in Wisconsin and Illinois have an actual rivalry. It was a story I was working on. And I talked to someone, and one of the issues that the Wisconsin folks had with Illinoisans, right, was that we just walk into restaurants and just seat ourselves.
Are like you
that was, and I was like, is that a thing? And they're like, yeah, you guys come up here and you just seat yourselves. I was like, wow, that's so specific. Is that really a thing?
So like, I guess like everybody who works in the financial district just like vacations in the weekend.
There must be
Wisconsin,
like, yeah, they go up to Door County and they're like, we're taking this restaurant over.
Digging so deep to find that.
I know. Like, it was that. And it was like, you don't drive the speed limit. Like you drive over the speed limit. And there was another one that was, there's another thing. I can't
remember. We used two bladed razors.
It was a lot. It was just a lot about just taking stuff.
My brother used to bounce out at the Admiral. He was a bouncer at the strip club.
No big deal.
Yeah,
that's a highlight.
And he was like, "T, Polish guy. We're Polish." His Polish guy's favorite phrase is when they don't know what to do is "It's okay, I go." That they would just go to walk by him at the front host. "It's okay, I go." Like, just there, man, to the VIP section. "It's okay, I go."
Okay.
You know, like, walk into the back,
right,
dressing room. "It's okay, I go." You know, like,
hey, man, that's confidence.
Fair enough. Yeah, right.
It's that's okay. Confidence. There's a lot in
it's this Eastern European Jedi. "It's okay, I go." Oh, I guess it's okay. He go.
I guess it's okay. I've tried that a couple times. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, so.
How'd that go for you, Coffin?
I did end up paying the cover charge. Yeah. So it doesn't work so much for me. I had a good stretch going there for a while where I really got into being the guy who could negotiate out of a cover charge at any club. Yeah. Like, I was the guy to get up to the door and they'd be like, $10 tonight. And I'm like, you know what? I got like six people with me. I mean, you know, we're going to drink a lot. I don't think we need the cover charge.
Really?
Like, I would start there and try, and they're like, "It's for the band." I'm like, "No, that's really not." So, you know, and I'd be much rather into giving them my money directly. But I mean, if you could just, I got such a group, I'm looking in there, I can only see 15 people in there.
I'd be much more into giving the band my money directly.
Directly. There's so many things. My favorite and the hardest one of all time was we were in LA and it was the Viper Room.
Ooh,
yeah.
All right.
And I had a group of like eight people or so. So I said, "Let me take care of this." So I walked up to the door and to they do a thing where they pull you in. They pull you further into the club. So then there's the host thing. And they're like, "Tonight it's a $20 cover." I'm like, "Well, you know, it's a Sunday night. I'm looking in here. There's only about a half hour till bar time.
Fresh out of church.
I want to let you know I got a couple guys who are waiting right outside here. We're going to come in here. We're going to order some drinks. We're going to quickly accrue a pretty substantial bar tab. I think for your company, for my patrons, I believe that we can work out a deal." And I was working it, and I was like, I was on fire, man. This was like a golden moment for a guy who negotiates with doors. You're at the Viper Room in LA, right? And the woman's like, "I don't know." And I'm like, "Oh, I've got her on the ropes." Out of nowhere, suited guy comes up. "Can I help you guys?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, I charge $20 tonight, guys." I'm like, no, I just did all this work, man.
But it's Sunday. Yeah.
And I said, "You know what? I'm out of here." I did. I walked out. I go, "You know, we don't," and I went next door, and the guy's like, $5, some other club. And I'm like, "Listen, I got a group of eight guys." And he goes, "All right, you're fine." He was just like, "All right, I know you guys. Like, we're not going to do this. There's like 10 minutes left."
Part of your tactic is like, "We're going to buy drinks." Like, yeah. It's a bar, yeah. You know? Like,
of course you
unlike
are.
Those other people yeah. that are just standing there.
Listen,
you know,
I'm either going to pay the cover and drink a couple of waters, or I'm going to order Coronas for everybody around. So come on.
Oh, Corona, is that your go-to, man?
You're
such a baller, dude.
Each of us only has... I'm with eight guys, but each of us only has
$20. That's exactly
so right. Either we spend
listen,
it here
we're on a budget. We're on a really strong budget, and the bus is picking us up in 25 minutes. You can do that, too. TJ Jagodinski, Abby McEnany in studio tonight. We're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break here. We'll update on tonight's news. We'll get the update on the Cubs game, and we will return to continue. 312-981-7200. It's the worst.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst here. 312-981-7200. I'm Justin Kaufman here to 11 o'clock or when the post game takes over from the the Cubs and the Giants game 4 NLDS. Right now, not looking good. The San Francisco Giants lead 5-2 in the seventh, bottom of the seventh. Eesh. Carl Edwards Jr. is in the game. Still got some time left in the game. But we will see. Hopefully the Cubs can close it out here with miraculous good comeback. You know, mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm optimistic in the way that I say a good comeback, a strong comeback. It's for legend. TJ Jagodowski, Abby McEnany in studio. Two great improvisers helping us play the worst tonight. 312-981-7200. If you want to play, because we got great prizes tonight. We've got some Lou Malnati gift cards, and we also have tickets to Young Frankenstein, the musical that's playing out in Arlington Heights.
Wow.
So that's plenty of stuff. There we go. 312-981-7200. Let's go back to Pete Zimmerman. Zim, you want to go back around the horn? You got any more of the worst?
Sure. You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Footnotes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like them. I don't like reading something and having to read another thing at the bottom of the page.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about Pete, what about if they're like next to it? You know what I mean? But you don't have to go down. You just go over to the right margin.
Still don't like it.
No. Just don't know.
Yeah, okay. I hear you. There's like David Foster Wallace and those. Like, and then you feel like you're cheating if you don't go and read the whole thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's so small. It's like adding a whole nother book by the end, but just in tiny print. I hear you. That's a good one. That's you get pizza, Pete.
Is there time for crosstalk here? Okay, I'm reading this book called Shrill by Lindy West. You guys got to read it. And she does a lot of footnotes. And, I mean, that's where some of the best stuff is, man. You got to read the footnotes.
Find a way to get it in there.
Oh, you like the footnotes.
Dude, well, in Lindy West's book, man, footnotes are balling, man.
But why doesn't she just make the footnotes?
How dare you, Justin? How dare you?
Actual text. What justifies something as to be a footnote?
Okay,
why not make 11, make 10, 9, and now it goes to 11. Oh, all right.
Okay.
So the worst, Lindsay West got it.
No, Lindy West is the
Lindy
best.
West, sorry.
How dare you? You can learn something by
DJ, reading
that
what
book.
Do you got for the worst?
Oh, the worst? Sulfur. Terrible.
There's nothing. What is the point of it?
Terrible. I'm a fan of the periodic table of elements. There's a dead spot sitting right there with the S, and sulfur is the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah.
That's a very good call.
Thank you, my friend.
That's a strong one. We don't get too many periodic table elements referenced in the worst.
There's so many great,
a lot of grocery stores, a lot of public transportation, but never the periodic table.
All the noble gases truly are, you know, the rare earths. There's so many wonderful columns and rows. Sulfur is just a big stinky gap
right in the middle,
right in the heart of Dixie.
Abby, what do you got, Abby? What do you got?
You know those strings on the like overripe bananas?
Sure.
You know when you're those things, has this been like said to every show?
No,
because
no,
they
no.
are the worst. And I looked it up; they actually have a name. It's called phloem. It's spelled phloem, but it's pronounced phloem. And they are just disgusting. And you know what? I have a hard time with bananas in general. I love them, but like one time, I used to have a real job with benefits and anything. Halcyon days. And one time I went to the bathroom and I came back and somebody put a banana peel in my garbage can in my cube. That's just rude. You know, and you know when you go to a coffee shop and like somebody's eating a banana and they just leave the banana peel in? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Have some manners. Like I do not. Oh gosh, am I in trouble?
No. You're good.
Okay.
You're good. Moving on.
Oh yeah, yeah. And have some manners. Have a banana. You take it peeled directly to the garbage can.
Yeah, you do not.
Yeah.
I get it.
And the strings are just part of my banana.
And it should be a generic garbage can. It can't just be the garbage can that's
in somebody's cube.
Oh, yeah, right.
And another worst thing, right after my mom died, I came back from the memorial service and I had two chairs in my cube and somebody had taken the extra one. My mom had just died. That was really bad.
Maybe it was to honor your mom's passing.
It should be like Elijah's chair, right? Yeah, like a chair for Elijah or a chair for Gina. You guys, what's happening? Peace.
All right, good. 312-981-7200. All right. Let's see. The worst. 262 says the worst is Rizzo, Russell, Fowler, and Hayward. Come on.
They're not the worst.
Way too early.
They're not the worst.
Are you crazy?
They're not the worst.
Have you not watched one game of, I don't know, a Milwaukee Brewers game this year? There's a lot worse
than where they put all the worst.
Absolutely no. No, I haven't.
No, you have not. All right. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what's the worst, Mike?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, Mike.
Oh, hi,
what do you got?
The worst, I kind of realized this on Sunday, is that the worst is that realizing that neither of the two candidates during the debate can hear my screams at the television set.
They can't, can they?
The only reason I realized it is because, you know, I'm watching it with my wife and my 13-year-old daughter, who's, you know, I'm glad that she's really interested. And I'm jumping up, screaming, and both my wife and my daughter probably are more interested in seeing, you know, who actually robbed Kim Kardashian. And they're looking at me crazy, like screaming, "Dad, they can't hear you."
It's like watching it from space, Mike, where no one can hear you scream.
It is true, man. There's a lot.
Hey, what's their theory on this Kardashian heist anyway?
More importantly,
I think it was a setup.
Yeah, inside job?
I'm trying to act like I don't watch the show, but okay. I do. And
Mike, you and me both, buddy.
Mike, do you mean it's a setup?
I'm running out of ideas.
Do you think the Kardashian set it up? Or like it was an inside job at the hotel?
No, it was set up by Kim Kardashian.
You do?
And maybe Kanye.
Maybe Kanye.
No, I don't know, man.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Good job, Mike.
No problem.
All right, that's tough.
I love that a family watches the debate together. Yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah, except for the last debate, which was not a great family friendly debate.
Well, I gotta say these debates are not family friendly in general.
Yeah, it's funny because my 9-year-old, I was like, okay, so you know what? Here we're gonna watch this, but at the same time, I need to explain. sexual assault. What do I? Let's go play Super Smash Bros. We'll catch up on this debate next time around. Yeah. Right?
You don't really think coming out of presidential debate, you're going to have an uncomfortable talk with young people.
That's absolutely,
like,
what you're
that never comes up.
All right, are we ready? This is going to be exciting. Some things will be over your head, and we need to talk about some really
complicated
issues.
We have to turn this off. I have to talk to you guys about Social Security. It's a political third rail. The nation's getting older. Guys, I know you're not going to want to hear something.
You don't want to hear this. Oh, all right. Let's go to Margie. Margie, what do you got for the worst?
The worst is when you've got your bowl of popcorn, you sit down, you've got the remote in your hand, you're going to watch your favorite show, you turn on the TV and realize that your remote control batteries are dead and will not actually flip the channel.
Ooh. Do you take them out, rub them a little bit, put them back in?
No.
No?
Hey, you can do that even if the remote does work.
I go listen to the radio. That's what I do.
You just give up on the whole night?
I'm just like done with the TV. The remote doesn't work, I don't want to go change the batteries.
Well, then I think sometimes, Margie, like, we have a setup. Thankfully, this hasn't happened in a while, but I don't know if I can change the channel.
How do you turn the TV?
Yeah, because if you change the TV channel, you take it off the channel that works the cable.
I can't even. Yeah. At first, I was like, I was like, no, I don't even know how to do that anymore.
And this is the day we realize the machines have taken over. This is how we find out.
When you tune in tomorrow night, Margie, and they're like, hello, welcome to the download. You know it's over. All right, thanks, Margie. Thanks for that. All right, 312-981-7200. The number. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll give away some prizes. Sound good, guys?
Yo,
amazing.
Yeah,
sounds good.
All right, stay with us. Oh, yeah, it's the worst here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, TJ Jagodowski, Abby McEnany in studio. As we wrap up this hour long, what's interesting because, you know, we're still in the top of the eighth. The Chicago Cubs down right now to the Giants 5-2 in the eighth. Coming up right after the game, we're going to have post game, the True Blue playoff push here on GN. Mark Carmen and Kev Powell, Adam Hoge, they'll join me, and we will do a little post game. All right, so let's get to what I still have. I have a few here, so let me get to the worst. 214 says the worst is mousse. It's just snobby pudding with air holes.
Oh,
that
yeah.
makes me laugh. That's a good one, man. And also, why mess with chocolate pudding? Am I right, 214? Come on, man.
Also, the best is mousse the animal. Those things are phenomenal.
Yeah, right.
Phenomenal.
I was going to say mousse the hair gel.
Oh, yeah. I was just talking about that the other day.
I was going to say mousse from Archie.
That's the one thing I miss about not having really super wavy hair is, like, I can't use mousse, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing you miss.
That's what I...
Come now.
Because it's great to...
Yeah, no, I'm telling you. 606 says, you know what's the worst? A dead skunk in the middle of the road.
Ooh.
Stinking the highway.
No, I would say the worst is a dead skunk under your house. That's never happened to me, but that would be the worst.
Oh, we want to play that game in your cereal box. We can put this dead skunk in a lot of places that are pretty bad. I mean,
it's a new improv game. You guys should take back to the clubs. Dead skunk.
Dead skunk.
Now that we're going through it, in the middle of the road is exactly where you want it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to play Dead Skunk. What we need is a suggestion of where we found the dead skunk.
When I, you guys, we had dogs growing up, and they both got sprayed by skunk, and that's a bummer, man. Mm-hmm. Get all that tomato juice, and it's just like the Partridge Family episode, you know?
They don't. I mean, there are skunks in the city. You'll get them up on the northwest side, other places, but I don't have a skunk problem. I have a rabbit problem, and everyone here in the download's sick of hearing about my rabbit problem. I had like, and I will say. I'm very happy to say that they are gone. They grew up and they left my flower, so that's great. I had a little bush in the front of my like little foyer area, and a rabbit gave birth and made a nest.
So cute.
7 or 8 little rabbits, and then they just were like too scared to leave the yard, so they were just there and they ate everything I had, every plant, everything, and then. Just recently, like in the last 2 weeks, I think as the cold comes on, they're like, hey, I'm an adult now.
Yeah.
I mean, the rabbits, they grow so quick.
Wow.
It's like, they gone. We gone.
You helped that family.
Yeah. But I mean, now they're just menacing that, you know, you walked on the sidewalk. They're out of control. They got baggy pants on. They're just like, now they're the teenagers of the neighborhood.
They're like, God. They're like the T-Birds.
And in a month, they'll outgrow that, and they'll
be walking all sad with a shirt and tie on going to the L. Like,
back to the grind.
Here are all the pervs and psychos. I have to go hang out on the L.
Frog eat frog world out there.
847, you know what's the worst? The Cubs can't hit a curve.
Yeah, no. They play in the major leagues and everything.
All right, so let's go ahead and give away these prizes. We've got some prizes to give away. We've got a pair of tickets to Young Frankenstein, now playing at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center in Arlington Heights through November 6th. Mel Brooks' hit movie comes to life in this madcap musical filled with memorable songs like Transylvania Mania and Putting on the Ritz.
Ooh.
Get tickets at metropolisarts.com or call 847-577-2121. Also, we got a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. All right. So for third place tonight, who's going to get a Lou Malnati's pizza, let's go ahead and give it to Mike.
Yeah, Mike.
And the whole family. Watch the third debate with it.
Yeah, right? Yeah, get a Lou Malnati's, watch the debate, and maybe, just maybe, throw a piece at the TV. Yeah.
Tough to scream when your mouth's full with delicious pie. Delicious pizza pie, less likely to start screaming.
And then maybe by the time the third debate comes around, we'll get to the bottom of this Kardashian.
That's right.
We'll know what's happening.
All right, let me go down the list here and find our second place winner. It is right here, 513. They're going to get a pizza as well. You know what's the worst? When your vegan wife orders a grilled cheese without the cheese.
There you go.
That's called toast. That's should I give them the tickets?
Give them the pizza pie, no cheese. It's just called crust.
You do a half and half. You get you get all the toppings on one. And
yeah,
then
give them the tickets. That family's got a cheese problem
to begin
with. Yeah, I don't want to cause a problem because it sounds like you're gonna mess up the pizza.
True. Yeah, you can't veganize that thing.
You can't mess up a Lou Malnati.
Enjoy Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to give Young Frankenstein tickets to the second place winner of the 513. Does that sound good, Pete? All right, Pete. Abby's like, yeah, I got it. No, yeah, it sounds good. I'm in. All right, here we go. And so for first place tonight is something that's near and dear to us Illinoisans. We seem to do it all over, especially in Wisconsin and in the financial district. 630 says he works in a very busy restaurant in the financial district, and the worst is when people just walk past the host stand and say, do I just grab a table?
Mm-hmm.
No. What actual restaurant do you just grab a table? Sure, I'm just standing here to tell you to keep walking past me and grab a table. Do you like my reading of that?
Yeah,
really good.
It's good.
Pizza.
I'll go.
It's okay.
All right, so we did it, you guys. We have put to bed another the worst. TJ Jagodowski, Abby McEnany. So you guys don't have any shows or anything coming up, or you have tons of shows and you don't really want to talk about it?
Not really. Same as usual. TJ and Dave. The late night on Wednesday. Watch Shrink when it comes out on CISO. I got to figure out what CISO is and how to get it.
We've had a lot of great comedians, a lot of buddies. Brad Morris had a CISO show.
Balt had another one, I think.
Matt Besser was on talking about UCB CISO. CISO is very familiar to the Download Nation, a great digital channel for NBC that is putting out great comedians from New York and LA. So that's great.
Yeah, great content.
And you got nothing, Abby?
Just around town.
I don't want to let you guys go. That's the thing. I barely get to see you guys. This is like, I have no life. I do the show, and I get to see my friends, and I'm like, oh, well, I'll see you guys around. TJ, right. Abby, good to
the
see you.
The A-Team!
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, so the Chicago Cubs entering the ninth inning. When the game is over, the postgame will begin. The True Blue playoff push presented by Wintrust Checking. Adam Hogue, Andy Mazur, Mark Carmen, Kev Powell, who's out at the stadium. There's a lot to talk about. Obviously, we'll do it tonight. They're going to be broadcasting the postgame from 11 to 2 tonight. So let's keep it here at 720 WGN. Also, tomorrow night, I'm excited about this. The Blackhawks season opener, the Blues come to the United Center. How great is that? I mean, I have to say, like, as far as home openers go, the team that knocked you out of the playoffs last year, to be the team that you get to exact revenge on the first game, the home opener, is pretty special, especially since it's your rival. St. Louis Blues come to town. This is going to be fun. I'm excited to kick off the season. The preseason kind of got me jacked up. We went to a game. I also had a great time watching one game. I feel like I'm ready, and the city of Chicago is ready for Blackhawks hockey. And I have a good feeling about this year. The team is stacked. They didn't lose too much. It feels like they got the great names back on the squad. Everyone seems to be relatively healthy. The World Hockey Tournament didn't kill anybody. So I feel like we might be in a position where this could be a special year once again for the Blackhawks. But then again, that's what the Blackhawks do, right? They are a team that they're always in the game to make it a special year. They are what every other sports organization in town is aiming for, to be, striving to be. The Chicago Blackhawks are a team that definitely is a model for Chicago sports. Speaking of Chicago sports, of course, the Chicago Cubs in San Francisco tonight. We'll catch up on that game in just a moment. I have to say that was fun doing the worst. TJ and Abby, they're so fun. I'm a great crew. I mean, obviously, you know, we've got such great talent in Chicago. You can see TJ all over the place. Like you said, he's in the new show Shrink, which is Tim Balt's show, which is shooting here right now. He really pushed to shoot it here in Chicago, which is awesome. Tim used to be a Second City. He's a Second City alum, and he's really making a name for himself in Hollywood. Also, TJ was in the show Easy, Joe Swanberg's show. We had Joe on last night. And TJ, if you don't know, TJ is one of the duos for the Sonic commercial. You know, when you see TJ Jagodowski and Pete Gross, who's also been on the program, doing the Sonic commercial, the two guys in the car kind of improvising around. TJ is one of those guys, if you couldn't recognize by his voice. So that, of course, always fun to have those guys in studio. And Abby, she's done so much great work in her career here in Chicago, and she continues to do good stuff. So that's all good. All right, so coming up this week on The Download, I'm excited. So we have tomorrow night off. It's cool. It's cool. It's cool. But that's a good thing because the Blackhawks are on. But we'll be back on Thursday. We got some great people. This week is the season premiere of Check Please. Catherine Diorio, the host, will join us on Thursday to preview the season. How cool is that?
She's been on, I've had her on a number of different shows. Kind of since she's been on the show, and she has failed to get me on the show, so I'm going to bring that up to her when first thing.
Every time you're done with an interview, you're like, hey, I just want to be on the show. And she's like, great, my people will contact your people.
We'll be in touch. Uh-huh, and then all of a sudden I see new season's done. What?
I have a funny story. Well, I guess we taped something. TJ and I actually did it. We taped something with Mark Baser. Mark Baser, the great guy who does the interview show, which is on TTW and also at the Hideout. We just did something with Check Please, a sketch, a bit, that's going to be in the new season of the interview show coming up in the fall. So I got a chance to go up there with David Manilow and Catherine and be in a position where I actually got to sit in the chair, like on the set of Check Please.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The bit took place on the set. So you're sitting here like, and I said it and I realized it kind of came out wrong. But I quickly redeemed myself, and I was like, you know what? I mean, this is kind of like, I don't know, like it's kind of like being on the set of Bozo. You know, like, I mean, this is...
Yeah, it's, like, yeah. Iconic.
I know, but they kind of came across like, look at this bozo clown show.
Oh, no.
But I was like, that quickly. I was like, no, I mean, it's iconic. Yeah. In Chicago, like, there's only one set like this. Everybody knows, like...
Yeah.
And there really is, like, there really is someone who's pouring wine and stuff like that. Like, there's, like, it's actual wine. I'm like, eh, I don't know if I need to be doing that, but... I thought that was really... I always thought that... I always wondered. I know you're a big Czech police guy.
Yeah.
But I always wondered if that was real wine, if people are getting juiced. And they are. I don't want to give away Czech police secrets, but how cool is that, huh? And the best part is that I've worked with those TTW engineers, a lot of the guys there. And I knew them from... I did a show with Paris Schutz and other people a couple years ago. It was like a comedy show we put on Channel 11, Ill Informed. So I worked with a lot of those guys, so it was kind of like nice to see them again. But I remember they told me a lot of stories, and the set in which the room in which they do Check Please is the same old studio that did Soundstage, right? They have a new Soundstage at
right.
WTU, but this was the old one. It's kind of like you can tell it's very 70s like in there. And it's also a Soundstage, an early Soundstage was Andy Kaufman. Andy Kaufman came to Chicago to actually do a pilot episode of a talk show that he wanted to do. That actually has some ties and inspiration for Pee Wee Herman and the Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse. And so they did the original pilot with Andy Kaufman, and he died shortly thereafter. But the pilot was him doing Andy's Funhouse. I think it was called Andy's Funhouse.
Wow.
And it was kind of like weird and just very Andy Kaufman. And I remember I had a tape of it when I was a couple years ago. And I remember the bit that was hilarious is it was a talk show, right? So he had guests, and I think his guest was Shirley from Laverne and Shirley. I can't remember. Cindy Williams?
Yeah, Cindy Williams.
And that was who his guest was on the show. And he built a huge desk that he had to climb a ladder to all the way up into the rafters that he sat at. And then the guests were down on the floor. So he would look down and be like, tell me about your new movie.
Like everything is normal.
Everything is normal. And it was a great – it's bits like that. That's what you get from Andy Kaufman, right? And I just thought that that was awesome to be in there. And I said, I asked the guys when I was there, I was like, this is kind of cool. That is this the place where Andy Kaufman? And they lit up. They're like, yeah, this is where – not a lot of people know that. But yeah. Andy Kaufman did the soundstage here at WTTW back in the early 80s.
That's awesome.
Like 1980 or something like that. So anyway, that's coming up. I don't know exactly when that's going to air. But Catherine's going to be on the show on Thursday because the new season starts on Friday.
And I will buy – so the new season starts on Friday, so by mid-November, I will have aced my impressions of all the guests.
At the beginning,
yeah.
Like, montage.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, guys. I can
it just seemed a little dry.
Yeah.
Wow, look at this. The Chicago Cubs make a little bit of a comeback. In the top of the ninth inning, Ben Zobrist just doubles – to drive in Chris Bryant and put Anthony Rizzo on third. So right now, nobody out. The Giants lead 5-3 in the top of the ninth. Sergio Romo, their closer on the mound. Ben Zobrist doubles. Rizzo to third. There's a little bit more speed. He would have scored. The game 5-3 with two Cubs in scoring position. The tying run on second base. That has to be that was a big play. Mark Carmen and I talked about some of these players needing to step up. They've had kind of lousy NLDSs, one of which is Anthony Rizzo, who walked a couple times in the game today,
mm-hmm.
and Ben Zobrist. And Ben Zobrist comes through with a double in the top of the ninth inning to cut the lead to 5-3, and their runners in scoring position as pinch hitter Chris Coughlin comes to the plate.
All right.
Ooh, but now Bruce Bochy looks like he's going to Penn to get rid of Sergio Romo. And here comes the chess match.
Yeah. I felt like Bruce Bochy really did a yeoman's job of managing. He's a pretty good manager, as it turns out, last night, because that was a game. Do you know that the Cubs haven't lost three games in a row since before the All-Star break?
Wow. See, the stats like that don't matter, though, in the playoffs, right? I think it's interesting, though, that Bochy essentially just to be able – to take Chris Coughlin out of the game, he takes out his closer in a closed situation. Nobody out, second and third. 5-3 game. That's Sergio Romo's job. He's already obviously done a poor job in this inning. But he takes the closer out to go to another arm, to a left-hander. because they already introduced Chris Coughlin. So Chris Coughlin sits. Wilson Contreras comes to bat instead. So Bruce Bochy essentially does a strategical move to take his closer out to remove a pinch hitter from Joe Maddon's arsenal.
So now Coughlin's out of the game.
So is it possible that he is playing for extra innings? Just lost a bat. I don't know why you would want Wilson Contreras up at the plate in this situation instead of Chris Coughlin. I mean, I don't know. I right away when I saw Chris Coughlin come to the batter's box, I'm like, really? All the bats you have from Jorge Soler and everybody on the bench are going to go with Coughlin because he's left-hander? And Bochy sacrifices Coughlin and Romo by taking Romo out to be able to actually play into Joe Maddon's. This could work because you could have a Wilson Contreras, who I think fans alike, Mark Carmen talked about it too. He's 3-for-5 in the series.
Yeah,
you'd much rather
series.
Have Wilson Contreras up there than Chris Coughlin, wouldn't you not? It's interesting, right? All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap it up and we'll get to the post game and let you know what's happening in this game. Stay with us. Well, the mood is much more jubilant here in Chicago as the Chicago Cubs, with their last three outs, were able to pick up three runs in the top of the ninth inning to tie the San Francisco Giants 5-5 on a Wilson Contreras single up the middle, scoring Anthony Rizzo and Ben Zobrist. This after the strategy, Pete. I mean, these are two major managers in the playoffs right now. The strategy, let's go over it again. Sergio Romo, the closer for the Giants, walked Rizzo. Ben Zobrist doubles to put guys in second and third, 5-3 score. Joe Maddon announces Chris Coughlin, left-handed hitter. Bruce Bochy comes out of the dugout, takes his closer out, Sergio Romo, still with a two-run lead, to go to a left-handed pitcher to essentially have an advantage over Chris Coughlin and to force Chris Coughlin out of the game. Chris Coughlin reports he then is taken back to the dugout. His night is over. He never even got to face the pitch. Instead, Joe Maddon counters with the rookie catcher Wilson Contreras to take on Will Smith, the former Milwaukee Brewers closer that the San Francisco Giants got at the deadline. Gets to a 1-1 count, hits a single up the middle, scores the two runs to tie the game 5-5. Jason Hayward hits into what could be a double play. The ball, Brandon Crawford throws wide. Jason Hayward is now on second base with one out. The lead run, the go-ahead run in the top of the ninth is on second base. Bruce Bochy goes out. He takes Will Smith out of the game. That's where we are right now.
Wow. And Brandon Crawford, one of the best shortstops in the game, defensively, certainly.
You know, beyond the idea of, like, okay, it's still tied. You know, they could get out of this inning, and we could have a repeat of last night. You could see the Giants walking off and doing the same kind of thing again. These are two Major League Baseball teams. This is a series. If you're a Chicago Cubs fan, if you're a Chicago baseball fan, and I know as a fan of the White Sox, watching this kind of baseball, this is the kind of stuff that you want to see in the playoffs.
It's fun.
Evenly matched teams, it's fun. The managers are toying around. The players are making clutch plays. We saw that all week. Right now, Javi Baez at the plate, the young superstar who's swinging for the fences already. That's the only problem. They get jacked up. They get the adrenaline pumping, and Javi Baez wants to win this with a home run. But Javi Baez, who has been unbelievable this game, he's 0-for-3. He's due. He's up at the plate right now. He's taking on the relief pitcher Strickland. I don't know much about this guy. I don't know how familiar you are with he looks nothing like former DePaul point guard Rod Strickland.
No, he does not. When you watch games like this, though, doesn't it make you? I mean, you're a White Sox fan. I love the National League game without the DH.
Yeah, it's much more strategy. The only thing that's great about the DH, I would argue back, is that you do have an extra bat in the sense if you're the fan and you're watching all the strategic moves, that's great. But if you're if you want to see a hitter come up right now, a hitter comes up as opposed to someone deeper in the lineup where it has to be replaced, things of that nature. I actually like the DH because I like watching skilled I don't like watching pitchers hit. It's been awesome to watch in base this series, obviously, Arrieta. And, oh, and a base hit for Javi Baez. He scores. Jason Hayward from second base. The Cubs take the lead 6-5. The top of the ninth, they score four runs in the top of the ninth to take a one-run lead. Aroldis Chapman warming up is silent. It is quiet in San Francisco at AT&T Park. Wow. That's how you do it, Chicago. The Chicago Cubs facing what could be a Game 5 back here at Wrigley Field. Down three runs in the top of the ninth inning. Come through. And the man who comes through, Javi Baez.
Wow.
He's becoming a superstar in front of us here in Chicago.
Right,
a kid who was a platoon player, Pete. He was a guy that we're like, eh, maybe we should, Mark Carmen was talking, maybe we should trade him. We don't know what kind of value he is.
When Castro was on the team, it was like he was, on, you know, they might get rid of him.
Even this year, there was like, well, Zobrist, where do you put Baez? Yeah. You know, maybe he's got to learn to play a different position. Javi Baez showing his worth tonight with a go-ahead single, an RBI single to take the lead. The Chicago Cubs 6-5 in the top of the ninth inning. Esmeralda.
Now you have Chapman, who pitched 25 pitches or something last night. He's been pitching a lot.
Yeah,
This is why they got him.
But
he's going to need to cut.
We've been saying that all.
He needs to get three strikeouts in the top of the or the bottom of the ninth.
Oh man, if you're the San Francisco Giants, the prospect of having to face Aroldis Chapman in an actual natural bottom of the ninth situation, down a run, arguably the best closer in baseball.
It's only one out. Let's get a couple more. Let's get some insurance here.
That is true. There's only one out, but 6-5. I mean, a four-run top of the ninth inning. Mr. Martyr, have you ever seen anything like this?
I don't know. I'm worried about Chapman's 25 pitches. It's pretty taxing.
You Cubs fans, man. No. Oh, there it is. That looks like a double play ball.
Who is the shortstop for the Giants?
Brandon Crawford.
Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah, and he's
supposedly. Couple of throwing errors tonight already.
I have to say, Rob, you know, he is, I think percentage-wise, he is the best shortstop in baseball.
Well, percentage-wise tonight, he is now the worst shortstop in baseball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what a tremendous, and they're showing highlights from last night's ninth inning. The Chicago Cubs showing up in late innings in this series. Javi Baez in game one. Even yesterday, Chris Bryant in game three. Tonight, four runs in the top of the ninth inning. This is a Chicago Cubs team that isn't necessarily expected to rally like this. I mean, they usually are playing ahead. The amount of clutch that we're seeing in late innings in playoff baseball is tremendous. Tremendous. Unbelievable. Well, Aroldis Chapman is coming in to close the door here in the bottom of the ninth inning. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. All right, Aroldis Chapman is on the mound. He's here to close out the San Francisco Giants. The Cubs lead 6-5. Unbelievable. Rob Martyr will have the update throughout the newscast. And, of course, the post-game, the playoff push, the True Blue playoff push presented by Wintrust, coming up with Adam Hogue, Andy Mazur, and Kevin Powell, as well as Mark Carmen. Everybody here ready to give you the stats and analysis from tonight's game.